Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 503, interview with Gus from Rooster Teeth and PAX Prime 2015 recap, recorded live on September 10th, 2015. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm, and tonight we have a very special guest with us, heralding all the way from Rooster Teeth. We have Mr. Gus Cirola himself. Welcome to the podcast, Gus.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
It's been quite a while that we've been trying to get another Rooster Teeth member on. I think the last one that we had was Bernie, and that was about, I want to say, 4 years ago or so.
It's been a couple of weeks then.
In podcast years, that might equate to the same thing, yeah. I think we're kind of batting for a Rooster Teeth employee every 3 years, so I guess it'll be another 3 years before we get our next person on the show. But yeah, so I wanted to kind of just talk to you about what it is that you do with RTX and Rooster Teeth, and kind of what it is that inspires you to keep on doing some of the stuff that you do at Rooster Teeth and gaming and media and TV. And I know a lot of stuff that people don't necessarily hear about is what's kind of the life outside of working for a place like Rooster Teeth. So I think that's what we're going to get to for everyone that's listening at home, and it's going to be a pretty short interview for how long our podcasts are, but don't worry, we're going to be having some Ready Up Live guys on to talk about our PAX experience after we're done with Gus. So Gus, again, thanks for coming on.
Mm-hmm.
First things first, I know you guys have had plenty of videos that you've put out about how Rooster Teeth got its start, how you started Red versus Blue. So I kind of want to go back a little bit to really, how was it that you first got involved with gaming, and how did kind of Halo fit into that for you personally?
Well, how did I first get involved with gaming? Like as a gamer from like a fan side?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm going to date myself here, but I got into gaming with Pong. My dad found one of those old cocktail gaming machines when I was a little kid and brought it home and fixed it up for me, and got my start with the Atari 2600, you know, after that. And I mean, ever since I was a little kid, you know, whenever I could hold the joystick and push one button, I loved it. So I've been gaming for a really long time now.
I know a few other people that have said that they have Atari. I think one of my college professors actually had an Atari 2600. So that just kind of is interesting that you got your gaming on so early in, I guess, what we consider the current era of video games. I mean, it's grown so much since then.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, that, you know, going back that far, looking at the first foray into home game consoles. You know, there was a huge, I think it's pretty well documented, you know, there was a huge explosion of them after the 2600. Everyone, you know, was really trying to rush to market, and which resulted in less than good systems and games, which caused, you know, a crash. And video games went away for a few years. It wasn't until, you know, the NES kind of resurrected the movement that it really, you know, got back into the swing of things.
So how is it like kind of going through, I mean, I guess you've pretty much been around through every video game era that we kind of know in current history. So how's it been going from something as early as Pong and going through the Atari, going through the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, and now to something like the Xbox One and PS4? How's that experience been for you personally?
I feel like now, you know, looking back, you know, when things started and when obviously when consoles were and even when PCs were a lot less powerful, you know, obviously your graphics were terrible compared to what they look like now, but that fostered a lot more imagination and creativity. You know, you had to really try to envision what it was that you were playing. You know, if you were playing the old game Adventure, you were literally a yellow square, you know, so it's like, what is that yellow square's motivation? You know, what is it that's driving that yellow square? You know, and now I think we've reached a point where, you know, graphics are so lifelike and so realistic that we get really fixated on that. So I'm a lot more curious to see some of the more, I'm curious to see, and I'm happy to see that indie games and stuff with a more of a lo-fi aesthetic become popular. You know, like everyone points to Minecraft, and you look at all of the indie games at Sony touts and that Microsoft are showing off for the Xbox One. And it's good to see some diversity and not everyone just focusing on making things try to look as lifelike as possible.
And one of the things that you guys have really been featuring at RTX over the past couple of years is those indie games. And I know there's that one, the mech simulator that you've had for the past couple of years. And that just really kind of harkens back to, I guess, simpler times in video games. So it's, I mean, it's really cool to see a really standout company like Rooster Teeth and you guys really supporting all those indie devs, because it really harkens back to kind of how gaming was, I guess, about 20 years ago.
Yeah, we're huge. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we're huge Halo fans. We love, you know, big AAA titles, but, you know, we want to also try to make sure that, you know, the smaller games and smaller studios get love as well. You know, we're always reaching out, trying to find the next big game and try to invite them down and have fun with us in Austin. You know, I was one of my favorite games at E3 this past year was an indie game called Butt Sniffin' Pugs. And after, you know, I saw the game, I played at E3, you know, I said, we've got to get these guys to RTX. You know, I really like what they're doing with, you know, a different controller and just a different gameplay experience. It's I thought it was really branching out there.
Yeah. What was the big motivation behind you guys, or I guess you specifically, because we've heard about the story with Red versus Blue starting, but what was it about Halo that really interests you?
Well, I had always been a Bungie fanboy. When I went to high school, I spent all my time in the computer lab, and the computer lab was all Apple computers. So, you know, obviously there weren't many games that you could play on Apple. So, you know, all we would do is we would just kill all of our time playing Marathon, Marathon 2, and, you know, Myth. And I got really into Bungie as a developer. So when Halo came out, I was really excited about it. I remember Oni came out, you know, shortly before Halo, and those were two games I was really looking forward to playing. And, you know, Oni was fine, but Halo I really, really latched onto. There's something about the multiplayer on it just reminded me of my old Marathon gaming days. And it was just a huge draw for me.
And now we have another franchise like Destiny that's out there. I know a lot of the guys over at Rooster Teeth really like Destiny. And, I mean, 343 has done a pretty good job of taking the Halo legacy. I know there's been some bumps down the road, but Halo 5 is looking pretty promising. What's your take on Halo 5 as we've seen it kind of out there in the wild so far?
I'm really excited about Warzone and seeing, you know, a slightly different take on it. I'm excited about this type of gameplay where it's, you know, yeah, it's FPS, traditional FPS like you know it, but with these AI components. You know, it makes me think about, you know, recently Titanfall did something similar, and it also makes me think about, you know, even like MOBAs with like League and Dota, where you have, you know, yeah, your ultimate objective is to kill the other human player, but killing NPCs and interacting with the world also affects the outcome of the game. And so I like to see the actual core mechanic expand a bit. So I'm glad to see it, especially because I'm terrible at shooters online. So if I can assist my team in some other way, I'm excited about that.
Right. I heard someone else recently actually compare it to League as well. And I'm not a huge League player, so can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
So I'm not a big League player either. I play Heroes of the Storm, which is like I select the Blizzard version of a MOBA. But it's like you're basically pushing your way across the map, taking down objectives along the way, and taking out NPCs as you progress. So you take out NPCs to kind of build up your character level, which allows you to take out like fixed artillery positions, and then just keep pushing your way down the map to ultimately take the enemy's goal. So it's not, I mean, and yeah, along the way, okay, you're going to fight, you know, PvP against another human, but, you know, early on, you're trying to get those NPCs and trying to take out, you know, towers on the way to help get your level up to be able to do more and more damage.
Gotcha. And what do you think of the whole requisition system? I kind of really compare that to the Titanfall burn cards, and it seems very similar. And I liked how it worked in Titanfall, and a lot of people have been really voicing concern because of like imbalance that these cards could possibly put in the game, with some people having cards for maybe like a Mantis or a rocket launcher versus those that don't have many. But with the whole rec card things, do you think that's going to be, you think that's a good addition to Halo?
Intrigued by the rec packs, and I think that from my perspective, it seems like 343 is really trying to get into the esports space. You know, they have the Halo Championship Series going on, and they're putting a lot of support into that. So I think that the rec pack system has to be thought through very well on their end, because otherwise it would, you know, if it was imbalanced, like you said, or if there was a problem, it would cause trouble for competitive gaming. And it seems like they're very focused on competitive gaming right now. So I'm very confident that they're making sure that it's a balanced system.
And it looks like that they're doing a pretty good job with it. And knowing that it's just in Warzone not being an arena for at least the weapons themselves, I think that's a good step. And mm-hmm. I really hope it turns out well for them, because I think Warzone, from what I've played for it, I've probably played maybe 4 or 5 matches of Warzone so far. I first got my hands on it at E3 and then again at PAX a couple weeks ago. And I think it just really fits well having the 12-on-12. You have a little bit bigger play space, which a lot of people have been asking for a while. And you really do have kind of any scenario that you want to go after, you can. So if you really want to engage on the player on player combat, you can. If you want to stick more towards the AI, you can. And I think it just is a little bit more of a fun game type instead of just straight up big team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of big team battle, just because it's such like a target-rich environment. You know, you're definitely going to run into opponents and things to shoot all the time. And this seems like an even, you know, a bigger extension of that. You know, more players, you know, NPCs, more stuff going on the map. So there's always something you can immediately jump into and get to.
Mm-hmm. So what's kind of your idea with the whole virtual reality stuff that's kind of going on in gaming? I know there's the Oculus, and HoloLens hasn't really been tooled as a gaming peripheral, but that could have some gaming use down the road. What's kind of your take on the whole VR thing with gaming?
I've been extremely skeptical of it. You know, we talked earlier about how I've been gaming for a really long time now. And mm-hmm. I feel like over the years I've seen ebb and flow where it's like, oh, virtual reality is going to be really huge, and then it goes away. And then it's come in waves several times. So in this wave, I've been, you know, super, super skeptical. I haven't really had much nice things to say about it. Except that actually when I was at PAX, I did get a chance to try out the Vive, you know, the Valve HTC mm-hmm. VR helmet headset. And I was actually really blown away by the Vive. I thought that it was awesome. All of their demos are really polished. I didn't have a lot of the trouble that I've had in the past with some of the Oculus things that I've tried out. So the Vive actually turned me maybe a little more positive onto the idea of VR. I think that, you know, I wear glasses, so I have a lot of trouble with headsets a lot of the time and fitting my glasses into them. But, you know, they fit fine into the Vive.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have, and sometimes with some of the VR headsets, I can feel a little motion sickness, or, you know, there's tearing. And I felt like that system was actually really, really solid. I didn't feel any motion sickness. I felt for the first time, I actually really felt immersed, like I was in a game.
That's awesome.
That being said, the HoloLens is actually probably what I'm most excited about.
You got to try it at E3, right?
I have had a chance to try it, yeah. And okay. The thing that I like about the HoloLens is that it doesn't obstruct your view. You know, you're not locked off into your own little world. You can still see the actual world around you. And I feel like the experience is additive to the world, and it doesn't replace the world that you're in. And I like that a lot.
Do you see any personal application in gaming for something like HoloLens? Because outside of the Minecraft demo that they showed off during the press briefing, it seems pretty early in the game for considering HoloLens as something that's really going to be a game device or a gaming peripheral.
I mean, I think there's some low-hanging fruit that can be easily accomplished with something like HoloLens. You know, an obvious example would be like, let's say you're playing an FPS, and you want to check your map, but you don't want to take your eyes off the screen. If you could have the map next to your television, just kind of floating in midair, that would be, you know, I think that would be handy. Or even like a leaderboard, or, you know, stats that are up in real time around your television and not actually blocking your core experience and allowing you to continue playing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, think of all like the heads up info that you're looking at. You know, you're playing an FPS, you want to see, you know, where you are in the rankings right now. You want to see how many points you've got versus the opponents. You know, normally right now you got to hit a button and pull up a menu. It takes you out of the game for a second or two. You know, imagine if that's just sitting right next to your screen, not blocking you at all. You can continue playing, just take a quick glance over. Same thing with maps. You know, instead of just like a little mini map, you have a full map and you can see, you know, a tactical view of what's going on, you know, where your teammates are in a firefight and whatever information's available to you, again, without having to stop your movement in the game.
That makes sense. So like just have something where you could look off to the side and see all your stats that you want to see.
Right. And it doesn't stop you from running or, you know, whatever it is that you're in the middle of doing at that moment.
Interesting. I had not thought of that.
Yeah, like I think about, like right now I'm playing a lot of Metal Gear. I don't know if you're playing it, but I think about how frequently I'm pulling up the iDroid in game. And I'm like, man, this is really annoying. If it was just persistent and not blocking my view, it would be a lot more handy.
Okay. All right, yeah, okay. I see what you mean. Yeah, I've watched a couple streams recently of that. And I can see what you're getting at there, where you can just kind of look over, interact, and then look back and have it kind of translate. Similar to, I guess, how Battlefield has its the extra thing where you can have someone else come in and do airdrops and stuff. Just have that as a separate. Okay, interesting. I had not thought of that before.
Yeah, so I mean, I obviously, you know, for like core stuff, you know, you're not going to be able to. I mean, I don't know. I'm notoriously bad at predicting the way the technology is going to pan out, but I couldn't see, you know, any more of a practical, you know, actual like shooter mechanic working other than like additive information, which is in its own very valuable. But you know, I think a lot of the other things that they showed, you know, at E3, like the Minecraft, you know, being able to build and see your creation in front of you and walk around it and see it from all angles. I think that was an awesome demo. I think they nailed it on that one. I don't know if you heard about, they had a Halo HoloLens demo at E3 as well. Sadly, I didn't get to see that one, but I heard that it was like you were experiencing a mission briefing and they put you in a room and the HoloLens made it look like you were on a UNSC ship receiving your orders from other members of the UNSC.
Yeah, I actually got to go through that. It was pretty awesome. And my story is kind of actually pretty unique, and I think it's probably my best Halo moment, but I actually got to go through it with LeVar Burton.
Oh, cool.
So, like, the original kind of, like, HoloLens guy being Geordi on Star Trek is just one of those, like, oh, this is really cool moments that I'll never forget.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. I never thought about Geordi's visor as being, like, a HoloLens. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so that's my one big Halo moment that I think nothing will ever top ever again. So what is it like working at Rooster Teeth and being surrounded by games and entertainment all day and then going home? Do you still do the games and entertainment? Is just done in a completely different way, or do both of those lives just merge so much together where your job is basically your life and you just enjoy life to the fullest?
Well, I mean, it helps that I love video games. I've always wanted to play them. Sadly, I don't get to play as many games at work as I would like to. I spent a little bit of time playing a game at work today, but it wasn't as much as I would have liked. But no, I definitely play way more games at home than I do at work. But it's fun, you know. It's, you can sit there and, you know, my job is to play games. My job is to be connected on the internet, you know, read articles, like spend time, you know, on our community website. I spend time reading Reddit, and that's all work for me, you know, just reading and keeping up on social media and doing all of these things. So it's really cool to have that be, you know, what I get to focus on and what I get to do.
That's awesome. Transitioning a little bit more to like the business standpoint of things, RTX has been a huge success you've had it for 4 years now. Is that correct?
This was just our fifth year, but
fifth one?
It was our fourth year in the convention center. So technically, yeah, four. The first one was kind of a fan meetup.
Right, which you oversold in tickets.
Yeah, we're not good at that stuff.
Well, you've gotten a lot better, and I have to give you and Barbara and everyone else who helps run RTX huge props, because it's been awesome to go to ever since I started going 3 years ago. And I just kind of wanted to ask, what's it like to put on a convention like that that's just continuously growing, and where are the kind of plans down the future? Because we've seen PAX kind of turn into this like just rush fest of trying to get tickets to PAX and them selling out in 45 minutes or whatever, and RTX is growing and it's not quite there yet, but I mean it could grow to the point, because you have such a huge community base, and as people start to just come out, do you ever fear that you might get into a situation where it's going to be so hard to get into, or is it something that you guys will try to continue to expand as much as you want, or you want to keep it small?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously, I think, you know, we definitely want to expand. We want to have as many people as possible come see it. You know, I think we still have a lot of room to grow. We, you know, we have sold out every year we've done the event. This year, actually in 2015, we sold out way faster than we had in previous years, which scared me a bit. When I say way faster, I think we sold out in 4 weeks. Normally it takes us a couple of months, but we did it in about a month this year. But as we continue to grow, we definitely want to make sure that anyone who wants to come to the event can come to the event. So it's hard when we do sell out. You know, we try to give people as much, you know, advance notice as possible when tickets go on, or when tickets are starting to run out. We try to make sure that everyone knows, but it's really hard to get the messaging out. There's so many different platforms available to spread the message. You know, we do it via our website. We'll do it via Twitter, via Facebook, via everything, but still it's hard to reach every single person and let them know in time. But I think we have a pretty aggressive growth plan. I think we're pretty, we still have a lot of room to grow. This year, I think we topped out. I think this year we had about 40,000 people at the event. Yeah, and I think we'll definitely increase that for next year. And we still have a ways to go. I think this year we only used, you know, maybe about half of the convention center. So we definitely have room to grow there. And we're starting to use offsite locations. We used a couple of hotels as well. And Austin hosts South by Southwest, which is a huge event every year. So I think we have plenty of room to grow.
Very nice. RVB season 13 just wrapped up, which is awesome. I thought the ending, the cliffhanger ending, was just epic. How's it been like going through 13 years of Red versus Blues, and is it as exciting to work on it today as it was 13 years ago?
It's very different. You know, we were such a small group for so long. You know, every shot of Red versus Blue, you know, I had a hand on it from, you know, all the way through season eight. I probably, you know, touched just about every shot. But then starting in 9, you know, we started adding more animation, started bringing in some animators. And, you know, since then, I've been a lot more hands-off with the day-to-day production. And in fact, you know, the past couple of seasons, I'm strictly a voice actor now on Red versus Blue. And I got to give huge credit to the team that works on it. You know, they really bust their ass, you know, trying to get all the animation done, you know, writing, the machinima, all of it. And then I think it all comes together really well. And they are really way ahead of the game. You know, we get scripts, you know, we have the whole season given to us as in a script form before, you know, filming even starts. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we're able to record all of our audio, and it's really a streamlined process, and they've got it down pat.
Now, I know for some network and cable shows, you have the actors sometimes are able to write a script for an episode. And I know Miles is kind of one of the, Miles and Bernie are still kind of the brain trust behind the story development for Red versus Blue. Do you guys as voice actors ever get the chance to kind of have input into the major storylines, or get to help like actually write an episode, or is it still mostly like under lock and key of Bernie and Miles to really come out with the storyline for Red versus Blue?
They've been pretty open to ideas. You know, these days, you know, it's pretty locked down, but if we have suggestions or our own input, they're always, you know, very willing to listen. I think years ago, I mean, this must have been around, I want to say maybe season 2 or 3, we did this thing where we made a couple of one-off videos and all of us wrote a different one. And mine was terrible. So I'm glad that I don't have that pressure to have to write something.
Gotcha. Well, we are hitting our 30-minute mark, so I don't want to keep you over the time commitment that you've agreed to. So thank you again, Gus, so much for taking the time to come on the show and just kind of talk about yourself a little bit. I know a lot of the stuff gets thrown out there from an official business perspective, so I hope this was not too bad of an interview.
No, it was great.
Going into some other different aspects. So thanks again for coming on the show. And remember, guys, you can check out all of Red vs. Blue Season 13 over on roosterteeth.com. That they just wrapped up. Their season finale was last week, so definitely go check that out. And thanks again for all the work that you guys put to making Rooster Teeth such a great place. And I have to say, for Rooster Teeth Expo, We had a great anniversary reunion, and it wouldn't have been possible without you guys having the convention there. So just huge thanks to you guys for continuing to put that on and being
gracious. Thanks for coming out and supporting us. You know, it would be a terrible convention if nobody showed up.
that it would be very awkward, I'm sure. All right. Well, thanks again, Gus. You can find him on Twitter at Sorolla. Anything else you want to plug before you depart?
Go check out roosterteeth.com. That's all I got to plug.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, so now we're switching over to PAX Prime coverage. So now I have joining me, hearkening from Ready Up Live, we have the CEO, Rebel Rouser. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show. I think it's been a long time.
It's been a while. I think you were maybe one of the big mass people shows that we had maybe last year or the year before, like one of the big convention recaps kind of things.
I think so. I think that sounds right.
Was it the one that we had 16 people on it or something?
I think we had that many people. It was massive and it was messy.
It was huge. Yeah, that was a lot of fun though. And we also have Minolta 1034 on the podcast as well.
The worst member of the Halo community. Hello, Dustin. That's my intro. No, it's so funny because I'm just going to jump in right here. Do you remember? Okay. So is the big group one you're talking about the one where Lars would not shut the heck up on like his phone that we remember that one that we recorded in Ricari's old apartment, Dustin? Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
No, it's not that one.
Do you remember that one though? And like Lars was like getting up and walking around and like getting pizza or something. I remember that. Everyone was looking at him like, shut up, dude. We're recording the podcast.
I had to go back and find that one. Was it during PAX?
That was I want to say it was my second PAX. So I guess that would be 2014, right?
2013. So it would have been last year?
2013. Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah, because it was definitely in Ricari's old apartment. That's what I remember.
Well, no, Ricari's old apartment would have been 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Yeah, it must have been.
Because last year we were at where he's currently living. The year before that, we were at Vic's house. And the year before that, we were at Ricari's old apartment. But I didn't think we recorded a podcast there. Maybe you recorded a podcast, but I didn't record a podcast there.
Maybe it was Nevin. Maybe it was Cruel. Probably. Doing the Ready Up Live podcast.
No. They were doing the Waypoint Community Modcast.
That's what it was. It was the Waypoint Modcast. That's what it was. Either way, that was another one that was a group one that was like just a mess, especially because of Lars.
I remember listening to that one.
Yeah. I remember that one. Oh,
that
man.
Was a crazy good one. Well, we're here to talk about the not so distant past and talk about RTX. Wow. We just had Gus on. So we're here to talk about PAX Prime, which happened 2 weeks ago, which was pretty awesome. Not as much Halo stuff going on, at least publicly, but there was a lot of cool things that we got to see, mostly people and just big community members. We had our typical Wing Dome, Ricarbecue, Halo on the show floor type of thing. And I mean it's kind of been nice this year to have a more laid back convention experience, except for me, RTX was huge because we were celebrating our 10 year anniversary, and then San Diego Comic-Con was huge because it was my first time there. But E3 and PAX Prime and PAX East has been a little bit of kind of like laid back and able to relax and actually just enjoy being with people. And that's kind of been the real highlight for me.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite for the summer. You go for the convention, but it's all about like hanging out with the people like after the convention in the evenings. Yeah, all those like you said, Wing Dome and all that stuff. Like, I mean, it was weird, but I think I played Halo 5 twice during PAX, and like that was it. It's the least amount. Like even like you said, I mean, for some of the like press events and stuff like that, I didn't even end up going to those because of like just limited attendance or whatever. And other people, like other RUL people or whatever, were just like more excited about that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna get to play Halo pretty soon. I don't need to go to that stuff. There's plenty. If other people are more excited, they can go. And I still had a great PAX, like just hanging out with everybody, seeing everyone, giving lots and lots of hugs. It's all about the hugs for me.
Well, I've been talking to some other people while I was there, and it's almost come down to the point where even if I am not able to get a pass because of how hard it's getting to get passes now, I would still go simply for the fact that Wing Dome happens every time, Rubarbecue happens every time, and there's usually some big Halo meetup or dinners happening afterwards. That
yeah, the RUL party is going to happen every time, I hope. I want that to become a tradition.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will.
And High Wire Games, that was one of my favorite parties. That was like essentially like just another like our community event. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been one of those things that PAX every year, and I think this is kind of generally assumed amongst a lot of the PAX goers and the Halo community, but it's basically the Halo family reunion. I mean, does that kind of feel like what PAX is to everybody now, at least within the Halo community?
Yeah, I mean, PAX Prime for sure. I'm not sure if I went to PAX East if I'd feel that way, but everyone, and I mean everyone, well, that's, I mean, anyone, PAX shows Prime. Up to Prime. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the like, family reunion with the family you choose.
Oh, wait, way to use their slogan, Jeff.
No, I thought that up myself, Josh. They stole it from me. Damn it. Oh.
No idea is original these days, it seems like.
Especially not Jeff's.
Culture. Yeah, I have zero original ideas.
Hey, I'm still waiting for my Demon Ulta shirt.
Next year, or you know, I'll get those into the spreadshirt. We got to get those into the spreadshirt store, Josh. We got to get those in there.
Team Minolta, Team Rebel, and Team Green Skull.
Wait, there's a Team Rebel?
Yes.
There is now.
I'll be the only one wearing the shirt, but there will be a Team Rebel.
No, I'll wear a Team Rebel shirt.
I see. But have you been in the video to make a Team Rebel thing? Because I thought the whole point of the team...
I have footage of Josh from this PAX doing Homefront that I still have to edit. Unless he's going to edit it. I don't know who's going to edit it. I don't know what's happening.
I think I have video editing skills. What?
Ooh, you think Canuck I have video editing skills? Canuck is calling you out saying there is no Team Rebel. A team must have more than one person.
Ooh.
By definition, he is correct.
Hey, Canuck, haven't you heard of the Army of One? All right?
Yeah.
That's an army of one, not a team.
That's true. I thought it'd be getting.
But isn't an army just kind of like a war team?
Not necessarily. At least I don't consider it that way.
I guess you
way.
Voluntarily join a team, and sometimes with the army, it's not so voluntary.
I will just
not
make,
always.
For instance, shirts. For instance, I can think of one soldier who did not choose to join the army, but he became quite the hero, quite the military hero anyway.
Could you be alluding to the Spartan 2s?
Well, I mean, like, yeah, any of the Spartan 2s, really.
No, I got your reference. Way to bring it back around to Halo. I appreciate that. Yeah. That was very smooth.
Just keeping us in the Halo track for podcast.
That was very smooth, so I appreciate that. As far as Halo goes, there wasn't really much outside of Warzone, which...
Why wasn't there Forge? Why wasn't there Forge, Dustin?
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on just around the multiplayer. We did get a tweet from Josh saying that there would be Forge stuff shown off before launch, which is good, but we're running down on that day. We only have 7 weeks left. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, when I was talking, like, there were tons of people at 343, and it's funny, like, that I ended up talking to or chatting with people, like, that weren't in, like, the like that you wouldn't expect to be excited about Forge, like even like Grim Brother One was like, oh dude, you just gotta wait for the Forge stuff. And I was like, really, Grim, you're excited about Forge? Like, what about the story? He was like, nah, screw the story, man. It's like the Forge modifications. And I was like, really? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that guy to be that excited about Forge, I was like, holy crap, Jeff. You know what I mean? And so I'm really excited because I feel like now that 343 has their kind of arms around the Halo engine to a certain extent, they've got enough experience with it, they can actually embrace and extend Forge. And like, I mean, it can't be, it's because it can't be that hard is, I guess, how I feel. Like, not that it's not hard, because I don't want to say that anything with Halo is easy, because it's like a huge, massive game. But like, certain things that Forgers have been asking for like a long time, wouldn't be that difficult to implement. And they kind of laid some of that foundation with 4. And so I feel like there's going to be like a crazy suite of tools in 5, because like, there's just so many examples out there in other games like Far Cry and stuff like that, for them not to be able to bring a lot of those features in. It's not like they have to think up, like, you know, when Forge originally came out, and like, tell me if I'm talking way too much, by the way, but when Forge originally came out, it was not revolutionary, but it was certainly a big thing for Halo, and I feel like for console FPSs to a certain extent. And so now there's been so much iteration on that, and so many games have a Forge or a sandbox mode like that, that it's not so much that they have to think up or come up with new ideas or ways. There's already so many basic group, not group, but basic ideas out there for what a Forge mode can be, and what should be the basic toolbox, like the basic group of tools that you use, is already sort of established in the industry. And so even if they don't totally revolutionize and blow everyone's minds with Forge, if they just bring it up to be commensurate with other games, it's going to be amazing. You know what I mean? Because the bar is already set.
Right. But the thing with, because I thought Halo 2 Anniversary Forge was awesome with the triggers and the switches and the timers and all that stuff. The Forge system for Halo 2 Anniversary was really cool. They had a lot of cool features in there. But it kind of teetered off because the file system support and the ability to share all those customer creations was just not there. Which,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're going to be addressing that in Halo 5 Guardian, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. But to your point, Jeff, I'm trying to think through all the first-person shooters that are currently out there on consoles. There's not another one that has a Forge system like Halo, where you can completely create your own maps, position weapons,
well, I mean,
and
like,
certain
Far
things.
Far Cry is always the one that I think of right away, you know, because the Far Cry engine and their map modifier is like insane. You can build so much stuff with it. You can build terrain, everything, like put down trees. Like, it's definitely the most advanced FPS map editor that I've ever used. But I feel like I'm probably thinking not just console, but like on PC as well. There's been some Forge modes, but either way, just like the whole concept of like a game sandbox like Forge thing isn't as new as it was back in 07, right?
Right. So the really interesting thing is the ideas that they're going to implement because of every game mode running on dedicated servers. So what new features are we going to get with Forge being completely there? So I know one of the big things is like an undo feature, which things that they've said they couldn't do it was because that they wouldn't be able to really keep track of who put who in what place. And yeah, but they can do that with dedicated servers, or at least the power is there too. So there's probably going to be some tools that we've been wanting for a very long time with Forge that's going to be coming with Forge 5.0.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm excited. And I hope that part of the whole Forge and theater stuff really kind of makes way for Machinima, because I think Machinima is kind of a lost art too when it comes to Halo. You don't see as many Machinima series nowadays. I know of a couple. Red versus Blue is still very popular, but its viewership has kind of teetered off over the years because Halo Machinima has just kind of gone by the wayside. But you also have some other Machinima video makers out there, but their viewership is small. One of the other Halo Machinimas that I keep track of diligently is called Marlin the Elite, and they maybe get a handful of hundreds of views when Machinima used to be like huge,
so big. Yep.
Playtime got tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of views across all of its episodes.
Yeah, it's a sad state. It's a sad state, because I agree. It used to be one of the biggest things on YouTube was Machinima. I mean, think about one of the biggest channels on YouTube. What was it called? Oh, yeah. Machinima.
And that's fallen by the wayside. And it sucks to see that most of the video space now is either dominated by Halo update videos, no offense, or streaming. And that's all people want to watch. It's like no one really wants to see Machinima, which is people going out of their way to use a game engine and create their own stories. I mean, just the storytelling from a community standpoint, that's really cool, but people just aren't into that anymore, and it pains me to see it that way.
Well, I think that, I mean, part of it is just like, I mean, obviously, like, Twitch has become really popular. I feel like part of it is just because Machinima, and it's about, and not to say that anyone doesn't do quality work or anything like that in the Machinima space, but it's like a live stream like Twitch or anything like that is kind of easier to like jump in and jump out of and like quick, shorter content, whereas Machinima is like long form. And I feel like there's not as much demand for like that more long form storytelling on like YouTube and stuff like that. It's much more like quick, kind of funny, like you said, like if it's a let's play or a live playthrough or something like that, you can just like jump in and like watch that guy get kills or like, you know, like a, you know, top 10 clips sort of thing. But like more long form stuff doesn't do as well on YouTube as it might have done before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it sucks to see that
at least
happen
in the video game space. I mean, like that's the thing with games, because obviously like the other side of it is I feel like actual like video creators and stuff like that do longer videos and stuff now than they maybe used to. But for game clips specifically, people want it like short and sweet. And it's funny because, I mean, hopefully, and maybe it'll bring that, is like, I mean, with the advent of like not only animated like, you know, GIFs or anything like that, but like full short, you know, like even on like the R Halo or anything like that, right? There'll be like WebM or like short, like they're, you know, like, or your clips that are straight off of Xbox, and people will watch those short videos. And so I wonder if like Snapchat style Machinima, you know what I mean? So like not a Machinima that's like a full episode, but like quick sketch style comedy almost with Machinima could become popular, you know, because they've said, right, I believe that Machinima creators are going to get some, with the new Forge and everything like that, are going to get some love. I mean, we all remember when they added the green screen, right? That was crazy, and that was all Machinima based, and that allowed people to like generate assets out and use them in different ways. And I saw that a lot with like quick meme-y little images of like, you know, just like Chief running and like things like that, that people were able to create. And so I wonder if that'll be the Machinima style content, maybe not a ton of like long form stuff, because the other thing is, let's be honest, Red versus Blue still does a great job with long form Machinima storytelling inside of the Halo engine. Like if you're going to watch a Halo Machinima, why wouldn't you watch Red versus Blue? Not to say again that anyone else doesn't have skills or anything like that. It's just they're still like just the biggest name in the space, so they can afford to continue to have great writing, great writers, and keep. And of course, just their production quality is going to be higher than any other Machinima out there. You know what I mean?
Right. But 343 has to be able to foster that kind of Machinima community too. And I know they've done a lot
the file share helps that.
Yeah. Well, from a Machinima standpoint, I don't think you can really do Machinima from a file share perspective, but it's...
Halo channel.
I meant like sharing assets around so that like more people could like, oh, I made a set. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I made like a giant thing that's funny. And then like someone's like, oh, look at this giant desk someone made out of BRs. I'm going to shoot a Machinima on top of it or whatever. You know what I mean?
That'd be interesting. Be pretty weird.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Halo channel is, like Josh said, another good way that they can help to foster it just by, you know, spotlighting community created content.
Yeah. And for the most part, I think Forge and Theater is going to be definitely there. And Josh actually tweeted earlier this week that there is Theater that's going to be there, and we should see some Forge stuff before the launch of the game, which is good. But it's just, there's been so much focus on the campaign and the multiplayer alone, where it feels like in the past we've gotten these tidbits about Forge and Theater and some extra stuff in there a little bit earlier than we have being this close to launch. So I just kind of want to see that extra goody stuff. Like, we know the multiplayer is going to be good. We've seen it at conventions. We've seen it like receive some pretty top-notch feedback, and the campaign we haven't seen too much of yet, but it seems to be pretty epic from what we have seen so far. I mean, just look at the opening sequence that we got last week.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty sick. And that's, I've seen this kind of go around Twitter and talking with a few other people, but if you think of the stories you hear in the books, that opening sequence is pretty much exactly how you imagine something in a book going down. So it's really cool to see that the cutscenes is really fitting the narrative side of Halo. So it's that kind of stuff that, like, what's the extra stuff that's just not game mechanic wise that's going to really pull me in? Like the Forge, like the theater, like the little call-ins to, like, the books, terminal stuff, any additional new things that hasn't been in any past Halo games. Like, where's that stuff to get me excited? And I think a lot of people were expecting Forge at PAX, and when they said nothing was going to really be there other than playing Warzone, a lot of people were disappointed.
Understandably. I mean, there hasn't... I mean, I guess there have been years with no Halo at PAX, but many, many, many years ago. So it was a bit of a surprise, and a major surprise at that, that there was no panel or anything of that sort. So was I crushed? No. Would it have been cool? Always. Halo panels are fun.
I know talking with Bravo, they've been going so hard at it. Oh, as like starting back early in the year with pushing Halo 5. That they're probably burnt out, so they probably needed a break from all the Halo stuff that they've been pushing. So I really don't blame them.
I don't think they want to oversaturate the market too much. And the thing is, obviously, like, because of the issues with Halo 4, they don't want to have another thing where the longevity of the game is jeopardized, right? And It's something where I think that they want to make sure that they support that aspect of the game, and then I guess they're hoping that that the other sort of communities follow to a certain extent. Because I mean, I agree that the way that I've always seen Halo is sort of two sides of a coin, right? There's the multiplayer and competitive aspects of Halo are a huge part of the game and so popular. But at the same time, I would say that the other half of that, if not just the campaign and single player, but it is all of that other stuff, which was so big in my Halo experience growing up and being part of this community. Obviously, like, I mean, I watched competitive videos. I was a big fan of T-Squared back in the day. But at the same time, I was also, you know, browsing through screenshots, which is like, you know, Drax, one of our RUL members, like that's how he kind of rose to prominence in the community, was taking incredible Halo screenshots. Because it doesn't matter. Like that's the thing, is that yes, you can be a competitive guy or a campaign guy or whatever, but if you have an amazing screenshot of a Spartan or something cool in game, or some clip that looks amazing, or some fan art or whatever, the walls come down. You know, like, you're not going to argue over, you know, like weapon placement on a map when you're looking at that. And that's parts of the community that can kind of unite everybody, in that, like, even stuff like insane Forge creations, you know, that are just like, because like there's some game types out there that have just been so crazy, you know what I mean? And like the inventiveness of the community is insane. And like, even if it's not, you know, like a super hyper competitive game mode, you can just absolutely respect that creation or the work that person put into it, because you just have the familiarity with the Forge and the series and the games that you're like, holy crap, like someone really put their heart and soul into this. And so while multiplayer is for sure to a certain extent the key to longevity, all those other parts of the community, I think, are kind of the glue that holds the Halo ship together. You know, if you want to view multiplayer and campaign as the two sides of the engine, then the chassis, the frame, everything like that, is that other stuff that is, like, you know, just art or work-based content. You know what I mean? That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with playing the game, but it's just something that you can appreciate as a product of it.
Yeah, that's right. Actually a very interesting point. reminds me of something that definitely caught my interest back in, I guess, Halo 3 and Reach days, because I don't think I recall seeing anything in Halo 4 or even the Master Chief Collection. Whatever happened to Rube Goldberg machines? Those used to be so big in Halo.
The Green Skull.
He was one of the few.
Pete the Duck.
Maybe the most prominent, but
Yeah. And again, like the thing is like watching a Rube Goldberg video, like you said, right? Like, I mean, you don't have to be a competitive guy to be like, whoa, someone put some work into the forge. Like, look at that golf ball, or you know what I mean? Like, it's rolling along. Like, that's not something that, like, sure, some people will be like, oh, that wasn't cool, or they weren't impressed by it. But like, those are the kind of pieces of content. Oh my God, Cortana, just leave me alone. I should turn that feature off. But those are the kind of pieces of content that like can really unite the community, because they don't play to any side. You know what I mean? They're just cool.
Yeah, it's almost as if they need a content curator to just.
They need another
community help foster manager. Things.
That's all that they need. I mean, Bravo. I mean, all the love and respect. Like the guy's awesome. But like, he just. It's not about him being a bad community manager. It's just about human beings only having 24 hours in a day. You know what I mean? And the Halo community being like a giant Hydra with so many heads that it's impossible to manage. Like you can't solo it. You know what I mean? I feel like they just need. They need another body in there to help manage that stuff.
It's a lot of stuff to keep track of too. There's so much stuff in the Halo community.
Especially the LCS. Because the HCS, the HCS and like all of that stuff in and of itself is just becoming more and more gigantic. You know what I mean? Like keeping track of the teams, the players, everything that's going on, each tournament, each event, like it's a lot. And so like, I feel like, of course, he's busy doing all of that. And that's the things that like, I mean, Bravo loves the most. That's his background. So let him keep doing that and then bring in, we need another BS Angel type, another Jessica Shea-ish person who's going to be into like, you know, lots of that other stuff, the just general community creation things that can handle all of that. Cause that's, especially if Forge and FileShare and everything like that become a huge deal, that could become like, you know, just a massive, massive beast of its own.
Yeah. I think they could really foster that kind of stuff too, and really help bring a new breath of life into stuff like Machinima, stuff like Rube Goldberg machines, screenshots. And they've kind of started doing that a little bit in the bulletins lately. They've had their little spotlights where they've featured some community content. But I feel that there's just so much of a focus on HCS and competitive right now that sometimes it gets a little overwhelmed by that instead of just like having its own little corner. But
well, it's just like the thing is, there's lots of things I want to read about Halo from 343 every week. Like, yeah, I'd love an update on the HCS and I want to know about that. Changes to the game, updates, multiplayer, new maps, DLC. Yep, that's a blog post, a separate blog post, mind you, that I would absolutely read and be really interested in. And then community creations. Oh, absolutely. I would totally read an entirely separate blog post again, just filled with, and it doesn't like, and then inside of community creations, like you could have, you know, on Tuesdays, you do a gallery of like 20 best screenshots. You know what I mean? On Wednesdays, it's the 20 funniest like Halo joke clips, like, you know, like cone to the head level stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. On Thursdays, you can do just general like Machinima. Like there's so much community creation content on its own that I don't think that obviously you could have like the bulletin being like the end of the week, wrap all of that stuff up together and give a general recap overview of everything, right? But I don't see why you can't have, just like we have Cannon Fodder and Grim writing that, you know, there could be several different blogs, each focusing on different aspects of the community and different creations so that they all get equal share.
Right. Bringing this back around to PAX, there's a lot of stuff that...
What?
Yeah, that thing. I mean, it just... Yeah, there wasn't much Halo to begin with, but I think this was the first time both you got to play Warzone, correct?
No. Yeah, I sucked at it.
I got a lot of hands-on time at X15 about right. A week prior.
Yeah. So what was your guys' first opinions of Warzone?
I'm going to be playing a lot of it. It's fun. I mean, I don't know what to take from it because I know they've accelerated requisitions and their cards are all the same currently. So balance can be entirely different in the actual game, but what I've played now, I have enjoyed. It's just so teamwork based and large scale that it feels like everything Halo should be to me. And I love every second of it.
I love the fact that the team who is winning at any given point in the game can change in an instant. Oh, yeah.
So quick.
With the AI bosses and one of them being 250 points, which is a quarter of the victory points that you need to win, you could be losing from a skill perspective, just having one team completely hammer you. But if you go after the objectives, you could still win. And I think that really brings out a fun aspect for Halo that you can get a lot of casual players in there, not necessarily competitive. Because traditionally, the big team battle or big team slayer playlists have been the ones where you bring in guests and bring in friends or family that maybe aren't quite the ones that play Halo as much as we do and don't have a problem. But it's something where they come in just to have fun. And I think Warzone is just a lot better way to really bring that around for a lot more people to just have fun in Halo and not necessarily go for something that's big and competitive.
Yep. And actually, when you're talking about that, I don't want to bring up the split screen debate, but it would have been a great split screen gameplay.
Yeah.
That said, I'm not hurt that it's gone.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking with some people at the office today about the possibility of playing games across some of the TVs we have on our walls. And that was one of my biggest, I got, some people are Halo fans in the office, some people not so much. And I definitely got roasted a little bit for the no split screen, because I was like, man, I wish we could play Halo 5 multiplayer, but no split screen, we'd need a lot of Xboxes. It's too bad. It is too bad. But the thing is that as much as I do, I have enjoyed split screen gaming in the past, I don't do it enough to make it a personal issue for me. And it's one of those things that, like, it kind of sucks that they did it. But, like, at this point, it's like complaining about it or getting upset about it other than just to say, like, oh, I wish that I had split screen. But, like, there's no way they can, like, I remember when the petitions were coming out and stuff like that, like, put split screen in the game. And I was like, man, there's no way they are going to get, you don't know anything about software development, let alone game development, if you think they can just slap split screen in before this game gets released. They've got to hit a deadline. Like, if something has to come out at a certain point. So, but, I mean, it would be great if they could patch it in, because I know that people have said, and I think that most people would agree that while having a beautiful, amazing, super high graphic 60 FPS experience is important to them, especially in a campaign or in like a match where they're playing solo on their own TV, when you are playing split screen, at least for me, like you said, Dustin, it's a lot of the time it isn't for competitiveness or because I want the best experience in the game. It's because I'm having a real life social experience one way or the other. And it's like, oh, let's put on some Halo. That's fun. We can all play that. Right. And so having like amazing, amazing graphics isn't my number one priority there. My number one priority literally is playing with my friends. So in that regard, it does suck. But I mean, because I'm such a loser, I don't have that many friends. So I just play it online, and it's not personally, it's not that big of a deal to me.
Gotcha. If you want to go to any convention throughout the year, I would definitely say PAX is probably the one you must go to.
Hands down, number one.
It's very personal, which is nice.
Very beautiful, like the Mona Lisa of conventions.
Although it is crazy.
Crazy fun.
I mean, the inside of the convention center is crazier every year.
It is, and it can be a little confusing to get around too if you're not used to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I mean, just comparing like the current PAX to like I've been so many times now. I love being so comfortable at PAX now, and that like it's super easy for like, especially even when new people come up, I'm just like, all right, guys, come this way. Yeah, you know, the show floor is this way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even, because even like in previous years, I'd be like, oh wait, where is that? But like this year was the year I really felt like a grizzled ancient. I was just like, man, I've done PAX so many times. What do you want to do? I'll handle it. Don't even worry. Like, it was great.
Right. Did you guys see the? I'm guessing you guys saw the Cards Against Humanity popsicle stand, right?
Popsicle truck. Yeah. You didn't see my video, Dustin?
Oh, that's you right. I did. My Cards no, Against I, Humanity I, video? I did. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We SMG bought 6 popsicles. We were like just sitting by the side of the road, just eating all these popsicles because he wanted like 2 sets of the cards for him and for his girlfriend. Uh-huh. And like we couldn't even none of us. That's the thing. We had 6 of them, and none of us could even finish one of those friggin' popsicles. They were too big. And they were awkward to eat because they had a pack of cards in them.
And I like how they said, "Don't eat the foil."
Yeah, no, right. Did you read what did you guys? I liked the little the messages on the sticks.
Yes,
were so good
I kept
too.
The sticks and the wrappers just because I actually do the holiday ones, and I've kept all the little mm-hmm. envelopes that they send because they have the nice little drawings on them.
They're pretty awesome. Yeah, the Christmas story this year was amazing.
They're pretty freaking awesome. So I kept the little sleeves and the popsicle sticks, and those were pretty good.
Yeah, that they were. What is it?
I don't know if this is appropriate to say on a family show.
The mango?
Oh yeah. I forgot what.
Yeah, speaking. Yeah,
mango.
Go kill yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Man, go kill yourself.
That was speaking of suicide from before.
Yeah.
No. That was, yeah. Well, I liked just the cherry one. Was like, it's too late to stop climate change. Cherry.
Yeah, they were ridiculous. Some of the cards in there though were very odd.
Yes,
and,
they were.
And not in the like Cards Against Humanity way odd that it's funny, but just all out weird. Cause there's a lot of cards that you get, it's like they're either horrible or odd, but in a very twisted, humorous way. But I felt that a lot of the cards in these packs were just like, who thinks of that? And how is that funny?
I really wonder if they're going to run out of ideas. Like Cards Against Humanity, I mean, they've been going for a while now. I mean, they're on four expansions,
six.
Right?
Six.
Six? No? Six. Jeez.
And like five or six packs is on the East That's the and thing. West
like,
Coast.
Yeah, like the 90s, the design, there's been so many Science packs. Pack. Like, I just wonder like, yeah, I wonder how many they'll be able to do. Like, I mean, there's only a limited number of words in the English language, right?
But there's exponentially more ways to combine them.
That's true. We're always finding new ways to say gross and disrespectful things.
Yep.
And they'll be right there to print them onto those white cards.
They could just reissue some of their old cards. Like, I picked up a card that they had changed a little bit, had them sign it when I was buying Exploding Kittens. But literally, they could just replace Sex with Patrick Stewart with Sex with Patrick Stewart's butt. They can issue cards like that, which would be a terrible downfall to them, I would think. But
I don't think they're going to run out of content like that for a while.
I was thought it'd be cool if they did like almost like a Magic the Gathering thing. Not that you have to pay for them, but like ultra rare, like super messed up cards or something like that. You know what I mean? Like you said that like you had a reissued, like a sort of changed one, Josh. But like, yeah, if they had like, I don't know, like I always think of the Pac-Man one. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I can say the full thing on the
Pac-Man
show.
Pac-Man guzzling something.
Oh,
yeah. That's the card that I like. That's just one of those ones that like almost always wins the hand.
It's
for
a
me.
Trump
and,
card.
Like,
yeah.
If they had some like ultra rare Trump cards out there or something like that, I think that'd be interesting.
Well, they kind of like, tried that with the bigger blacker box.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did do something like that, right?
I missed not being able to play Cards Against Humanity this time around.
Yeah,
you guys.
We didn't, did
Everyone
we?
Was playing Exploding Kittens, which
it is fun.
Like, it was so it. Funny. I went up. So like, I've been a fan of the oatmeal for like a while, right? Like I when I was living in San Francisco, I met him at a party through a friend of mine and stuff like that, and he was really nice. And I was like, hey man, I really like your work. I'm a web developer as well, and you know, we had a good combo and everything like that. And then I decided to go up inside him, and I was just like, hey, how's it going? I didn't expect him to remember me. I didn't even bring it up or anything like that. I was just like, hey Matthew, you know, like I'm a big fan of yours and stuff like that. And he was just like, I'm willing to give it to him. You know, even the oatmeal can have a bad day, but I feel like he must have been signing like all day that day or something like that, because he was just like, oh yeah, what did you want me to sign? And I was like, oh, I didn't have anything, I just wanted to tell you I was a fan. He was like, all right, well, I'll talk to you later. Like, was just like kind of like, all right, move on. And I was like, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, I'm willing, everyone, even the most famous people have bad days, and like no one likes to be adored and fawned over all the time. It sounds like such an amazing thing, but too much of anything can be a bad thing.
Right.
And I feel like even he was probably just worn out. But
what day did you go?
I want to say it was like Sunday. So it was later on in the week.
Yeah. See, I went on Monday and everyone was happier because it was so much less busy. They were actually complaining about how busy it was prior.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. Like I said, I figured maybe I just went on the wrong day, or it was the end of the day. I can't even remember when it was, but he was just having no disrespect to him, because I mean, I know, not that I know, but like I know that fans can be ravenous, and not that I'm anywhere near the oatmeal level or anything like that, but people like I think everyone in RUL knows what it's like to be constant, to be inundated with do more Minecraft videos.
Oh god,
Minecraft
videos.
My god, everyone that's even Green associated Skull? With that. Yeah, do you know the Green Skull?
No.
So what else did you guys see? Because I know for me, mostly I was interested in Halo, and so that meant I was by the Halo booth most of the time I was on the show floor. But what was some other stuff that you guys saw? I mean, because me, it was Halo.
A Rock Band.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They had, what is it, Rock Band 4?
Dude, we killed it. We had, yeah. It's Rock Band 4, and it's coming out. And, like, we had, because one of our community members, Nick, is working for Harmonix now. And so it was great. We went over, and we were like, hey, Nick, what's up? And they had, like, the full, like, stage set up so that when you were playing Rock Band, you were, like, playing to the line that was waiting to play Rock Band. So you were playing to, like, a little mini crowd and everything like that. So we got up there, and we got the Ready Up Live band together. We had Buckley, former 343, Chris Buckley, former 343 artist, on the bass. We had, I think Drax was playing guitar. Dylan was on drums, and I was singing. We did Short Skirt, Long Jacket by Cake. I have a video of it.
Oh, God.
I just haven't edited yet. It was great, man. Like, I told him, I was like, I don't really want a song where I have to actually sing. And he was like, I got the one for you. And I was like, yeah. And I actually had, everyone was like on the chorus and stuff like that. I had the line going. Everyone gave us a good clap and everything like that at the end. People were pretty stoked. It was super, super fun. Honestly, like, I was having, in terms of like reviewing the game or knowing literally anything about the game, yes, it is Rock Band 4. So it's exactly like Rock Band, except with new songs, I guess. But like the only thing that I couldn't figure out was how to do the special move or something like that. But the experience of just playing Rock Band, it's still just so fun. I love Rock Band.
I'm going to be getting some of that on this weekend. I'm actually hosting a little game night, which is going to be card games, board games, video games, all that. And I'm going to have my room downstairs mostly be Rock Band. And then another few areas set up. So I'll probably be playing some Rock Band this weekend. And it's been probably 2 years or maybe a little bit more since I've actually played.
Oh, God. You're going to be rusty.
I'm going to be very rusty. There's some of those songs that I could do on Legendary that I am not going to be able to do anymore.
Legendary?
Or whatever the difficulty. Expert.
I can tell you're a Halo player.
Yeah.
Wait, do you play Rock Band 4 Lasso?
Gosh, I wish I could. I'm not that good.
Rock Band 4 Lasso is pretty intense, man. When the elites are coming at you?
I think the ultimate test of that would be Through the Fire and the Flames on Guitar Hero 3. If you could play that song, you could probably play any song on any guitar game.
Yeah. That was how, it's so funny because that was Buckley's response, like, can you play Rock Band? And he was like, well, I can play Through the Fire and the Flames on Expert. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah, on bass. I was like, oh, okay.
Not as many notes. Not as crazy.
Not quite as many, but it was still, it was really fun. And like, oh, the VR stuff was killer this year. I've done VR like almost every year at PAX, and this year by far I had the most fun doing the HTC VR stuff. It was crazy.
Nice.
It was like the Oculus booth, me and Josh did it together actually. Yeah. And honestly, like, I like Oculus's tech. But I kind of felt like Oculus treated us like crap. Do you feel that way, Josh?
Well, I don't, because I actually got
you got the good one.
And you got you were like, here, you can have the secondary person. I got the full experience.
Because
developer walk me through.
Yeah, like Josh had the developer walk him through it and stuff like that. And then in between, so like we each get a session. And so in between, the developer guy opens the door and was like, hey, to Josh and stuff like that. And so I went over there and was just like, hey, I wanted to ask you some questions because we're doing media coverage of your stupid product. And he like basically blew me off. I was like, hey, how do you think that the cameras are going to work like in the house? He's like, oh, I can't really talk about that. And I was like, oh, okay. So in terms of like software partners, other things, we haven't really announced anything. I got to go. I'll leave you in the hands of this guy. And I was like, okay. And so then I was like, oh, so you work for Oculus? He's like, no, I'm just like a booth dude. And I'm like, great. So we get no information. This is basically just us using the product. And like, don't get me wrong. The product is neat. And Oculus did a good job with their tech demo. But HTC blew them out of the water. They have the Valve software, so you're actually playing games. And it was, you could actually like move around and do stuff. Oculus, you're basically standing still the entire time as they like walk you through the demo. But with the HTC, I was moving around the room. I was looking at a whale in the eye. I was flying planes. I was taking apart the robots from Portal. I was in the Dota 2 shop. Like, there was so much I did in HTC. And Oculus was just like, here's the tech demo. I'm going to make it underwater now. And like, that was neat when I first went into Oculus. But then HTC was like, oh, here's what VR is actually going to be doing. And I was like, oh, this is neat.
It's funny that you feel that way, because I've never been a VR supporter. And even just Oculus's presentation has convinced me that there is actually a lot of merit to what VR can do. It almost brought a certain amount of childlike amazement in me to be interacting the way I did. I mean, maybe it had to do with having a way better presenter than you.
Well, I feel like I did a lot of stuff when I ran through the Oculus demo. Like, I was throwing things up in the air and shooting them. And
you were doing it on, like, of your own accord, kind of? Like, well, I know the student is doing things before him, whereas my guy was 100% leading me through and showing me everything. I don't know. It was different.
Well, like, the thing is that I've done Oculus every year they've been at PAX. I've gone and done a media appointment with them. And every year before this, it's been really good. They've been like, you know, come in, I want to talk to you, like, really cool about it and stuff like that. And so this one time, again, I'm not going to throw Oculus out the window or anything like that. And maybe it was just, again, the developer guy was having a bad day or whatever. This is the first bad experience I've had, but I've done their tech demos every year. And so I'm pretty familiar with what they were doing. And I had read up on the hand things, the controllers, like, I knew what we were doing going into it and everything like that. So I was, like, super prepared to, like, pretty much everything they were going to do. And so while I agree, like, Josh, both me and you came out of that demo being like, you know, this was really cool. Like, we had a lot of fun. There was lots of neat stuff to do. Like, I really enjoyed it. But then, like I said, HTC
experiences
put it in perspective for me with, like, Oculus is a hardware company. That's what I feel like they are. They're a great hardware company, but they don't have a lot of software to support it. Like, all the stuff that we did was, first of all, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't like the graphics were insane. You know what I mean? It wasn't like it was very, very, you were in a gray room. One of the coolest things that HTC did for me was not only, like, first of all, okay, so you remember in The Matrix, right? When they loaded up the code and you're in, like, that white room, right? That's literally how they start. Like, they're like, yeah, here's our loading program. And I was like, this is straight out of The Matrix. And then, like, the whole thing does come out of the side. And it was like, it was actually like a personal computer. Like, I had a bunch of screens in front of me. They had tons of different programs and stuff like that were, like, examples. And I was like, can I open these? And they were like, no, please just go to the tech demo. If you go to anything else, we'll have to boot you out. And I was like, okay. But they had, like, a legit personal computer VR experience already set up. Like, there was a browser, there was a word processor, there was, like, a bunch of different things, like a movie player, and it was all, like, in this really cool circle around me. And I spun it around once just to, like, see, but it was, like, a really fleshed out idea of what a VR computer would be like. And then, of course, I went into the actual the tech demo thing where they were loading the different games and stuff like that for me. But it was just so much more fleshed out from a software perspective that I was just like, you know, and the other thing is that I didn't feel like I was getting a worse hardware experience either. Like, both of them just felt like I was wearing VR headsets. You know what I mean?
Well, I was talking to Gus just before having you guys on. He was really talking about how the Vive really is the thing that he's been most impressed with as far as VR.
It's awesome. It was so good. It was so good. Because, like, I didn't feel like it was any worse than the Oculus from a hardware perspective.
It's an experience thing.
Did the same. But, yeah, software, they blew them out of the water.
Which, like I've said, it makes sense, because if you partner with Valve, you're going to get top-notch software. Oculus would be wise to do a similar thing, but I think with all the Facebook money, they're probably thinking, we'll stand on our own merits.
Yeah, the Facebook money is interesting. They should have partnered with Microsoft or something. I don't know. But
it would have been more interesting.
Well, yeah, because I don't know what Facebook is getting. Like, I don't know. Like, you're going to play Farmville in VR? Like, that's what I feel like they just didn't have. Whereas, like, you know, like the Valve thing, just like the IPs, like, just the fact, like, the girl asked me, she was like, so I'll bet you're a Dota player, right? And I was like, nah, League of Legends, what are you talking about? And she was like, oh, well, that, do you want to do the Dota demo? And I was like, yeah, for sure. But, like, that was the thing, is that, like, they have recognized, you know what I mean? Like, if I could put on an Oculus Rift and, like, walk, or, like, not even interact with him to a certain extent. But if I could just walk around like a full scale, if I could see like a 7 foot tall Master Chief rendered in beautiful VR and just like walk around and like look at the armor like up close and stuff like that, like, ooh, that would be cool. You know what I mean? But like Oculus doesn't have any IPs like that.
Like HoloLens was cool at E3.
Although HoloLens does have that problem with like the framing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you break the frame, it really breaks the illusion.
That can be fixed in time, especially if it's as far out as I've heard.
Yeah, it's definitely, in terms of like, it's funny because as this technology comes out, it's definitely not like, you know, we're not at the holodeck from Star Trek yet, but like this is all the, you know, like if you're going for any or any universe, you know, like the holographics in Halo or anything like that, right? This is all the technology that precursors that, you know what I mean? Like we will get there eventually. And what's so cool to me is that like, while we might not be even alive for the final version of it, the fact that we're even scratching the surface within our lifetimes here. Cause like some of this stuff when I was a kid, even growing up and like, you know, the Virtual Boy for Nintendo came out, which was basically just like a screen strapped to your face. It's like, I couldn't even dream of a full VR setup like the Oculus Rift. Right. So, I mean, self-driving cars, we're already living so far in the future. It's insane to me. And it just keeps going.
Actually, funny, first time I tried VR was at Disney, and I'm sure many people as well.
Oh, you mean like one of those like
those weird things? Super long ones. If you like, if I had to get a picture of the headset, they're friggin' massive. Like they stick out almost a foot in front of you, and they're heavy, so they need to be connected to the ceiling. Definitely old school. It blew my mind as someone who was 10, somewhere between 10 and 12 years old.
Dang.
So it's been there. It's just not been consumer grade tech, and nor has it been done as well as it is now. And even then, think about what Oculus was 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, it's just going so quick. Look, did you guys see speaking of other VR stuff, there's that one where like it's the first person shooter where the guys are going through like the hallways that are like full VR. And it's like, it's just, you know, when you see the footage of it, it's like, you know, basically like office dividers, you know what I mean? Like cubicle walls. And they've just basically set up a maze. But in VR, it's like, you know, like a cave pathway system that you're going through and you look at it in an alien vista. But like the thing is, it is like if you go too close to the wall, you'll like bump into it and you're actually walking around inside of this environment. And there's just like basic real world things to keep you from like crossing over too far or like breaking the virtual walls. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like they kind of are analogous to each other. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, the VR stuff I haven't really looked into that much.
Oh, you got to check out next year, Dustin. Check out, come with us. We'll do, if HTC is there, we'll do that. Oh my God. I would, because Josh, you didn't even get to do HTC, right? Like I only got in because Dan couldn't make his appointment. And so I snuck in there so that we could save it because it was really popular. Like there was no one on this would know, but it was this girl who works for the Cloud9 League of Legends team that I know of on Twitter and stuff like that. She was like in line ahead of me and stuff like that. And they were, it was so popular that she ended up leaving because they wouldn't let her in early enough because she like had other things to do or something like that.
Yikes.
But, crazy.
And she, yeah, like I said, she's like a Cloud9 like high up person at least in the League of Legends. Not a player, but like a support
right.
person, like a, in the team infrastructure.
Even but, yeah. Next year, Oculus could be the go-to if they
make an
interesting demo.
And maybe if there's more, right? Maybe HoloLens will be showing off cool stuff.
I thought there was a third VR developer too. Not that I can remember its name.
I don't know. The two biggest that I know are Oculus and HTC Vive. I mean, the thing is, there's always indie games that are using Oculuses that are like over in the indie booth or something like that, that are, you know, like using an Oculus, but they built it with their demo or whatever.
Yeah.
It is. Hyperlight Drifter. That was the coolest. I don't like, this is like no segue whatsoever, but like the indie mega booth. Speaking of that, Hyperlight Drifter. Did you guys see that game? Like one of the most amazingly beautiful games I've seen. It's all pixel art style and you're like this cool swordsman sort of dude and you can like dash around and like I was really impressed with it.
I did not spend as much time in the indie mega booth as I would have liked because it's actually come to like I've come to a realization as of this year, it's in too small of an area and too many people want to go and see it now.
Yeah, it gets crammed up. I agree.
It is way too busy there these days. I remember when you could go and hey, I'm media for Ready Up Live. Let's talk about this game without even waiting.
No, like even like the thing is, it's I didn't get to play so Battlefront. Yeah, well, because there were booths that were literally not honoring media badges. Like I went up to Battlefront and I was like, hey, I really wanted to check out this game for my channel. I'm with Ready Up Live. And they were like, it's a media badge. No, we don't do those. And I was like, you don't do those? And he was like, yeah, we don't give special preference to media. You got to wait in the line. And I was like, can I film B-roll of the booth? And the guy had to go get somebody else. And then he let me through so that I could just film people playing the game, like just for general B-roll of the thing. And I was like, really? Like, I can't believe that. You know what I mean? Like, I know that technically getting a media badge for PAX isn't like impossible, but, you know, like you don't have to be from IGN, obviously. But at the same time, like it was weird to me that they were just like, not even interested in it. They were just like, nope, we're not honoring media badges.
I was
like,
it just depends on the company.
Yeah, Battlefront, silly EA.
I mean, that would have been Sony's booth, though, right?
Well, they were playing it on PlayStations, but I mean, it was the Battlefront thing.
I guess that's fair.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it was DICE people that were there. I'm not sure, though, to be completely honest with you. Because, like I said, nobody would talk to me. Like that was the other thing, is that when he had to go get somebody, and I was like, hey, can I talk to you for the game for a bit? And he was like, get in line. And I was like, shh, all right, fine.
I didn't even really know where the Battlefront booth was.
It was hidden.
I saw Sledge there, because I know him from when he was doing the Titanfall stuff. I saw him walking around the show floor, but I never figured out where the bloody booth was to go follow up with them and chat.
If you would have went on the first day, there was no lineup because no one knew where it was.
That was the secret.
That's what I've heard, at least.
Yeah, I slept in on our media early access. I really wanted to do that. That was the worst. That was the barbecue, right? That night it was right, like the barbecue. Yes. Yeah. So I just
tried to wake you up.
Yeah, but I was partying hard at the barbecue.
Yeah. Oh, well. I was too.
Some of the other stuff that went on that I actually got to do was the ID at Xbox thing, which was actually...
Yeah, I didn't go to that.
That was pretty cool. Again, I was only really interested in Halo for my trip out there. But they did have the new arena map Fathom out there. And that was actually a lot of fun to play on.
You saw Timmy the Whale.
I did. Well, I'm sure I did. I probably didn't like... I didn't go to the window and specifically try to look at it, but yeah. I saw it at some point.
Minor segue, but like it's funny because obviously like Timmy the Whale, he's a cool thing and like it's such a cute little aesthetic touch. But it's one of those things that like you will never ever notice in a in a actual game. You know what I mean? Like as much as Timmy's neat and like the amount of time that they put into him, it's something that I always think of like. Whenever I'm forging in Halo, I'm always like, ooh, yeah, now I'm going to put this beautiful tree in here and it's going to look really cool. I'm like, wait a second. If anyone ever actually plays this map, no one's going to look at this tree. No one cares about this. Or someone will look at it once and then they'll be looking down the sights of their BR because they want to like shoot somebody.
Right. They're looking past the tree to shoot somebody. It's hard because it's like building maps is an art form, really.
Yeah, I always, that's one of my worst things with Forge is like, I'll completely forget about map design and I'll just get totally caught up in some like stupid aesthetic detail that I'm like trying to build or like make look right.
Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse for whenever you actually do finally get your end goal vision out. But let's see, what else was there? For those who know who he is, Pro Ace Joker, who's a speedrunner, he actually did a couple of live streams at the games booth, so we actually got to watch him speedrun completely through Halo 4. Yeah, he speedran Halo 4 in an hour and 40 something minutes on Legendary.
Nice, Legendary too.
Which is hour and 40. Pretty insane.
It's a pretty insane time. Yeah,
just a little bit, but that was pretty cool to watch. And he actually streamed a little bit on Saturday and then again on Sunday. So that was awesome. But other than that, the Cards Against Humanity popsicle truck and the Halo booth and then Wing Dome and the barbecue, I guess the only other thing left to really talk about is last PAX dinner and the RUL party.
Yeah, I only remember about half of the RUL party, but last PAX dinner was great.
There were a lot of drunk people at that party.
Oh my god, yes, I got absolutely smashered. That was like the most drunk that I have been. Probably, I don't know if at PAX, if it takes the all time, but definitely the most drunk I was at this PAX. I let it all hang out that night. And you can tell when you watch that speeches video, oh man, I'm cringing.
I haven't seen that. Has that been posted somewhere yet?
Slawa posted an unedited version, like, cause when I release it, I'm gonna edit it so I don't look so awkward. But like, I was just so loaded that I ended up, I like gave a little speech of some kind, and then like I get off, and then I like try to do one again because I don't even know. Like, it was so bad.
I was louder than I meant to be.
Yeah. There was some good chants. It was all fun. It was all fun. I'm not, like I said, I was so drunk that I'm not too concerned about it. I had a blast. I was surprised actually how many people just showed up by finding out about the party like on Twitter or on Facebook that weren't necessarily Ready Up Live fans or community members or anything like that. I mean, obviously our community members outnumbered most people, but like there was that girl. Okay, this is a good question. Duststorm, did you get your finger bitten by that girl at the party?
No, I did not.
Because, okay, I have video footage, and like when I actually get the RUO video together, I'll put it out. But like, it was so funny because, yeah, I gave this girl the middle finger for one reason or another. I believe that, wasn't she the girl that was handing out those like Tinder for gamer things, Josh?
Yeah, it was Cuddly? Worse than Tinder for gamer.
it was some terrible, terrible app, and she was basically just media gamers whoring at the party, which I wasn't super pleased about it. You know what I mean? Like, she was basically just coming to try to like hand out those things, and so and me being not super pleased with something combined with me being drunk means that my filter, which barely exists as it is really gone. And so I gave her the middle finger, and she responded by biting me on my middle finger extremely hard. And the funny thing is that at the next day when we were at the last dinner, like you said, at Spaghetti Factory, I was like, yeah, this girl bit my finger. And then literally four other people turned around and were like, me too. And she bit like five fingers at that party. And I was like, what?
She was really drunk.
It was so weird.
That's weird.
I have a picture of her.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, like I said, I have the video footage of her biting my fingernail. Or my fingernail, my finger. It hurt. Twice. And then like earlier on in PAX, I helped like a little old lady down the escalator because she was afraid of the escalator. And she like, I think I tweeted the photo, but she was like grabbing onto my arm so hard that she left like nail imprints all down my arm because she was so afraid. I had to like, as the escalator was getting to the bottom, I had to be like, okay, 3, 2, 1 and step off. Cause she was like so afraid of the escalator in the Target downtown.
Wow. Did you guys find the homeless guy again?
No, he was nowhere, man.
Dang.
I looked everywhere for that guy. I was down in Pike Market almost every day, and I would walk around because he was always around Pike Market or like up in that like CD Showgirls area that's like just above Pike. And like I looked a bunch of times, and there was nothing. And I even had – there was another homeless guy who was like – he was mad at me. Like he had a sign that said that he was looking for – can I say, like, what's the policy on swearing?
I'll bleep it if
like,
I need
what
to.
What about the B word? The B word?
Okay. Just say it. So I'll bleep it if I need to.
He said that he was looking for a fat.
Oh, okay.
And so like, I was just waiting at the intersection and the guy's like, he's calling out, he's looking for this fat lady and he needed money to get it or whatever. And he like specifically asked me, he's like, hey man, you got some money so I can get a fat, you know? And I was like, oh, how fat are we talking? You know what I mean? Cause like, I like to know, you know what I mean? He's like, oh, she's got to be at least 650. And I was like, 650, that's nothing, man. You got to get up to 800. And then like, I just kept walking or whatever. And he's like, what? You're not even going to pay me for that? And I was like, what? You are a homeless person. How much is your time worth? You know what I mean? Like, I get that he was out there begging, but I was literally just standing there and like, he bugs me. And then I'm just like, so I'm whatever. And I just keep walking by. And then on the way back, he saw me and he remembered me. And he was like, there's the man with the diamond heart, heart of stone, heart of stone. And was like yelling at me as I walked by. And I was just like, geez, like give it a rest, dude.
Way off on the weed, dude.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. It was so funny. I was just like, I don't know what this guy's problem is. But yeah, so that was I had the opposite homeless experience. Yeah, that's one of my biggest regrets from PAX this year was not finding the homeless.
So I wonder if his
a tradition,
because this year PAX didn't fall on Labor Day weekend. So I wonder if the guy was used to like being there on Labor Day weekend, and then he may have been there last weekend instead of the weekend before of PAX. I wonder if...
Well, the thing is, I think, and this is what I want to imagine, and I'm actually, I kind of want to fit it into a video somehow. I want to believe that the dude, I'm serious. I want to believe that he actually isn't homeless anymore, because last year, and I remember this, he was still out there and he was still asking for money. But when I talked to him and interviewed him for the video, he said that it wasn't going to him. He was like, I'm not homeless anymore. This is all going towards the Veterans Association, I believe, or he had some sort of charity work that he was doing, and that's where the money was going. And so I want to believe that, like, maybe he just doesn't have to do that anymore. And like, he's living the good life, and he's got food and shelter and everything like that. Or, you know, he's dead. So there's those two possibilities.
Well, those are two different
morbid
ends of the spectrum. Wow. All right.
Well, I mean, he was a homeless guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, but Diamond Heart, I hope Jeff. That he's not Diamond dead. Heart. I don't want him to be dead, but I mean, I didn't see him, and that made me sad.
Gotcha. I did lie earlier, and the Are You Well party and last PAX dinner were not the only things. We also had the Highwire meetup. Crimson Stride.
Oh, yeah. The Highwire party.
That was fun.
So good. So good. I love Vic. I mean, like, I love Marty too, obviously, but like, Vic has been, he's such a good, you want to talk about transparency and community interaction? Vic is so good at
amazing.
That.
Amazing.
Yeah. He was awesome to
especially
see.
For like, the thing is, like, Vic's a high level dude. Like, I mean, for instance, like Buckley, I love Buckley and he's a great guy, but he was a little bit lower on the totem pole at 343. Even Ricari, you know what I mean? He's not a senior level employee, but Vic is, he's Vic. He's a friggin' legend in the industry. You know what I mean? And like the fact that he does so much amazing community interaction is something that like, I just feel like you don't like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I would say that Vic is on the same level as a Josh or a Kiki or a Frank O'Connor or any of those people. You know what I mean? But no. None of them do community interaction the way Vic does.
Remember when he was in the sprint?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when he hosted Rubarbecue 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Vic's an awesome guy. I love Vic.
I mean, you want to talk about,
I think we all do,
the unzen stuff that he posts about. Just go to his house.
I got to pick an unzen. That's one of my favorite PAX memories is at the barbecue. I was just chatting it up with Vic. We were just, you know, BSing about something, and an alarm goes off on his phone and he's like, oh, it's unzen time. I guess you've got to pick it. And I was like, what? And like, he took me to this folder in his phone, which is like seventh circle of hell.
Oh no.
It was just full. And he was like, yeah, you could pick anything from like here to here, like he mentioned it or whatever the range. And like, oh man, there was some horrifying stuff in there. I was like, where do you get all this stuff? And he's just like, you know, the internet. I was like, all right, okay, that makes sense. That's pretty much where all the worst stuff comes from.
Well, you guys saw the article that he had out about, well, it wasn't necessarily him, but about like game developers when they go through, and this was specifically for Halo, but like the stuff that people have to look at when they came up with like the flood. I forget what article that was, what that was, but it was an article that came out, I think like a month ago, and it was
the flood's horror.
And it was basically talking about how to look up these really just awkward things. You have to find some really awkward and hideous things like, on the internet
for like reference points, yeah. Right. To like even begin to model that stuff. Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's funny. I mean, the flood is actually a great example of this is a weird Halo tangent, but if you'll indulge me, of like in CE, obviously the flood looked horrifying to a certain extent for the graphics of that day, but the reason the flood were horrifying was much more to do with like the overall presentation and aspect of the game, right? It wasn't like it was just like a horribly gross, I mean, grave mind looking thing, you know what I mean? It was because they were coming at you and there were so many of them and you had no clue what was going on, especially the first time. And it was just like, oh my God, you know what I mean? And whereas, you know, I feel like that's much that back in the olden days, getting that response out of people was much more difficult with the limited graphic capabilities. Like obviously now the flood, I love how they've evolved and the way that they look, and they actually are like gross and horrifying to look at now, in that like you wouldn't even need to be Like if I showed you a screenshot of a flood of a flood infected marine or whatever from Halo CE, you wouldn't be like, "Oh, that's horrifying." You'd be like, "Oh, that's weird looking." You know what I mean? But like a modern model of the flood from in the game is like that on its own is disgusting. You know
Grave
what I mean?
Mind in Halo 2 versus remastered Gravemind.
Remastered Gravemind. Yeah, yeah. Oh. That was another thing I was thinking of. Yeah. But that's just one of the things that makes CE fantastic about like the fact that even, you know, like, or any old game, the fact that you could still instill that feeling of like horror or grossness or whatever with that limited graphic capability. They had to work that much harder to do it. You know what I mean? Just one of the things that I think makes CE a great campaign.
Yeah.
Rant over. tangent aside.
No, I mean, we're talking about Vic and Highwire and all that stuff, but it was a great meetup. Lots of people, lots of ex-Bungie people there that worked on Halo.
You know, we should have guessed when we saw Joseph Staten there that he'd be going over to Highwire like he did.
He's still at Microsoft.
He's still at Microsoft, though.
Yeah, he's still working at Microsoft.
Did you see the tweet from the Highwire Twitter?
Well, yeah, but like he's still like, isn't he? I thought he was doing both. Or did he not? Is he going exclusively to Highwire?
He still works for Microsoft.
Yeah, because I thought that he had a contract with Microsoft and then he was like, he was going, but Microsoft weren't. Like he was going to work with Highwire somehow, or am I wrong?
That's what I was under the impression.
No, I think the tweet you're talking about was just a joke tweet.
Okay.
Well, they followed up that tweet. I think I know which tweet you're talking about, but they followed up with it saying that, no, Joe Staten is not leaving Microsoft.
Yeah. He's not leaving Microsoft. Yeah, I didn't think so. I think I know the tweet you're talking about as well, Josh. Yeah, I don't think that he was leaving. I thought, if anything, I thought it was like, yeah. That makes
evidently,
sense.
I don't things pay enough attention.
Because as much as I would like to see Joe work with Vic and Marty and everything like that, I love that he's back in the fold. I love it. Like, I mean, he's one of the best writers Halo's ever had. I mean, he hands down understands the universe. And more importantly, I feel like he really gets what it is to be a Spartan. You know what I mean? Like more than a lot of other writers do. And that perspective hopefully will really inform now that they're focusing so much on the Chief and, you know, like his personal story and like how being a Spartan and like all of that stuff. I think that he's going to bring a lot of that to the table. I hope. Like, I mean, obviously like he's been writing the book and stuff like that, but I want to see him in the boardroom at 343 being like, this is the story. This is the way it's going to go. Whipping these kids into shape.
And I mean, he's writing Halo books again, which is fantastic.
Well, he's writing a Halo book.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for whatever he writes. I mean, I think I already said to Graham or something like that I'm just going to have to rewatch or reread The Fall of Reach for like the millionth time.
I need to reread it, especially with all the stuff that was put out there regarding Hunt the Truth.
Definitive Edition. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, when is Hunt the Truth season 2 going
to
start?
I don't know. I need to ask around and try to get an idea of when that's actually happening. Because it's supposed to be happening this month, from what they said during San Diego.
I know. Well, they're just like we've been saying. They're running out of time.
Oh, yeah. The game is going to be gold by the end of this month. Perspective.
Well, hopefully it is.
Typically, 4 weeks before launch is the aim.
I really don't like the whole, massive day one patch thing.
Yeah, no, that always scares me.
A game, whenever it's gold, it should be playable as it's shipped.
Yeah. Should be. In this day and age, though, everyone has internet, so why not put an update?
it's the way games are going. And
I love nothing more than to download 20 gigs on day one, on top of whatever I downloaded. Surprise!
The thing is, at least, I guess what I would hope is, like, and this is to Dustin's point earlier in the cast, was with the dedicated servers in that hopefully if there is problems or issues on day one, which let's be honest, there's probably going to be, it's very difficult to launch a game in the modern climate without having at least a few problems. Like I'm not saying that the servers are going to be down, but I don't know if they're going to, multiplayer is going to work like 12:01 AM onwards. You know what I mean? But hopefully with the dedicated servers, the issues aren't client side where they have to, like you said, push out some 20 gig update. It's more like, oh, the servers are on fire. We got to deal with the server room. But, you know, just wait and like, you know, okay, we got more servers up or whatever. And it's all that side of things, not a pushing out an update. You know, there's something in the game that's wrong sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Haas is being the awesome man behind the scenes, and he actually found the article I was talking about, and it's actually from Gama Sutra, and it's how working on gross violent games can mess with developers. So it's definitely an interesting read, and I think Vic has a little highlight in there, and actually has a little tidbit that he
because he's talking about Cortana.
No, right? Talking about the flood.
The first screenshot is Cortana. Well, yeah, but I mean Cortana. Vic built Cortana, not the Cortana map. The level from Halo 3, not Cortana the lady.
Got it.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's, I guess I was scrolling through the article, but yeah, the first screenshot in the article is after the obligatory Mortal Kombat shot is of course a screenshot from Cortana, one of the grossest levels. Yeah. One of the grossest levels in all of Halo.
Well, and it's kind of funny to think that the reason the flood doors look like buttholes is because, well, that's what they're modeled after. It's buttholes.
Buttholes are gross. Nobody likes looking at buttholes.
Anyways, the Highwire meetup was awesome, though. It was really cool seeing really all that talent in one room and just meeting up with community people. I mean, when does that happen?
Tons of talent. I know. It was insane.
Two completely different ends of the spectrum. One just like general fans, and I have to say that most of the people that were there were Halo fans and Destiny fans from Bungie eras of old. And then you had a lot of people there who were ex Bungie as well, who are part of Highwire now.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, it's funny, but like everything that I've heard and everything like that is just Activision is turning Bungie into just your everyday game developer. They're not the small art studio that they once were, putting out high quality Halo games every 3 to 4 years.
500
they're
employees.
A factory that builds Destiny DLC, and like that's all that they're going to be. And they got to hit their deadlines, and they got to push the content out, and that's all that they're going to do. And it's too bad. And you know, you can only do that for so long before people aren't as interested in it. But it doesn't even seem like it's that tough to continue to print the Destiny money. So when Marty O'Donnell or other high caliber creative talent jump ship, it doesn't hurt them as much. But I feel like hopefully people that are interested in you know, because there is going to be always a stratification of games and quality and everything like that. And I'm not a big fan of highbrow versus lowbrow or anything like that, but there's definitely more commercialized products. And then there's more personal, artistic or you know, creative specific products. And I feel like Highwire is super into doing, and what Bungie, what used to be super into doing, that specific creative aspect. I mean, when I was talking to everybody at that party, it was funny because like I talked to Vic and he was like, oh, Jeff, the game's all about story. And I was like, okay, great. What's the story? And he was like, well, I can't tell you anything about the story, but it's going to be great. It's going to be immersive. And the story is every part of it. And I was like, okay, so tell me about the art. And he's like, the art tells a story. And I was like, okay, Vic, I get that you're about story, but you're an art guy. Like, why are you so obsessed with the story? He's like, because that's where we want to go. One of the things that we hate these days is that like, it doesn't have a, you know, like, and all of that stuff. And it was the same thing when I talked to Marty. I was like, oh, Marty, so what's the new game going to be about? He's like, Jeff, it's about the story. And I was like, so what do you tell me about the music? He's like, the music tells the story. And I was like, okay. And that's what I got from everybody, is it didn't matter if you were like, you know, if they had the guy that was doing, you know, like friggin' modeling guns or something like that. It was like all of it was informing and reinforcing the main narrative arc of the game. And I was like, wow, that kind of focus on that particular aspect of the game is going to be amazing.
I mean, I spent a good amount of time talking to Jamie, and he entirely underlined everything that you just said there. And he actually did talk about Bungie and how he actually told me at the party, when you hear what happened to Marty, you're going to know exactly how much Bungie has changed. And he also actually made the very interesting fact that Howard has as many people that worked on Halo 1 now as Bungie does.
As Bungie did. Yeah, I heard that as well. And yeah, I mean, it's so true. I had the same conversation with a couple of Bungie employees, and I did a video a while back about why I thought Destiny came out broken and like the culture shift at Bungie and everything like that. And well, Vic was one of the first people that was like, yeah, you pretty much nailed it dead on. He told me that like when the video came out. And I kind of did a TLDR for a few Bungie employees that were still working there that had been there for quite a while. You know, like one guy that had been there for 9 years. Marty, of course, had been there for a while. And pretty much universal agreement that, yeah, like Bungie used to be, even when they got really big, they were still the spirit of a small, independent, like boutique game studio that was, you know, focused purely on the quality of the games. And even, you know, so funny because laying down with Microsoft, you know, people thought that was going to be the death of them. And it turned out that Microsoft was just like, here, have all this money, make more Halo games. And the reason that they left it was more just because they didn't want to keep making Halo games. And then they lay down with Activision, and the things that everyone said Microsoft was going to do to them 15 years ago, Activision has done
in 1 year.
Exactly, right? Like, that's the thing, is just it's unfortunate. And like, again, to my point before, I don't think that Bungie is an evil company now at all. I just think that they're focusing less on maybe the artistic or quality aspects of the game and a little bit more on the business. And that's just, it's unfortunate, and I don't personally agree with it, but it's a strategy, and it's a strategy that does work for them. And you know, like, I don't have to like everything that Bungie does, and I still do enjoy Destiny because the one thing that it still does have is the solid mechanics and gameplay that Bungie is so renowned for. And so, like, you know, I'm going to pick up the Taken King, and I'll play through it a little bit, and I'll get my $40 worth. But my Bungie flame is definitely flickering lower than it's ever been. And the more that I hear about 343 and the more work that they do, I mean, as much as they've had problems and everything like that, I feel like they're just like so earnest about it. They're just like, we just want to make a good Halo game, guys. You know what I mean? Like, they're not like evil and, like, you know, to go against my own analogy, but they're not focusing on business at all, because 343 is not a company that was developed or made to sell Halo games. They were made just to make or create or continue the Halo universe in any way, shape, or form. And it's literally staffed with a lot of people that just wanted to make Halo, which is a lot better motivation than what Bungie's actions have shown us.
Right. To be honest, the Bungie flame went out for me when Destiny launched, but that's just me.
Yeah, I didn't play on Destiny launch. I got up to like level 8, and I was like, screw this game. I waited for all the DLC to come out before it at least had a bit of meat on its bones.
It's too little, too late for me. I uninstalled Destiny from my Xbox. It's not something I'll be playing again.
And, you know, like, I'm not, and the thing is, I'm not going to argue and like say like, oh, you should totally play Destiny 100% or anything like that. I mean, I think that the problem is, and like, especially if you didn't enjoy it at first, is that like, and what sucks is that the price of entry is just so damn high now. It's like, you know, you got to get the game and all the DLC and everything like that. They're kind of making it cheaper and everything, but just the fact that like, and again, the thing that everyone's had the problem with is just, you know, like, release a half finished game and then get the DLC in there that sort of fleshes it out and everything like that. It just reeks of disrespect, which is something that Bungie has never been known for. It's very unfortunate. Yeah,
the Bungie that made Destiny is certainly not the Bungie that made Halo.
Nope.
Yeah. And you know what really sucks of all of it is, like, I remember last year at the Bungie event that we went to, and like, Jason Jones was there, and that's the first time that I had ever met him. And he was so jazzed up about Destiny. And like, it's unfortunate that like he's got so much passion for the game and like for the project, even though like the way that they're going about it is just so against or counterintuitive to a lot of the, I feel like, the ideals that Bungie started out with.
I just think they lost sight of it, a lot of it, with the leadership change and Activision.
Well, I think, yeah, it's partially the leadership change. And then the thing is also, like, I mean, they signed the contract. You know what I mean? Like, when you do the deal with the devil, Dustin, the devil owns your soul. Like, you can't get out of it. Just like, I mean, Jason Jones, like, I don't think that they could – I don't know what the penalties would be for breaking their Destiny contract. But it's like, I mean, even if he did hate the game, I suppose that he could just go into, like, his same, like, you know, crawl space or wherever he hid away during, like, the second half of Halo's life. But – you know, like, I feel like he's like, they can't do anything about it now. They bought the ticket. They're on the roller coaster. You know what I mean? They've already been through the first loop and the second one is coming up. And like the only thing they can do is grit their teeth and hold on. They're doing their best. I feel like there's definitely people in Bungie. There's still, like, I mean, people that I talked to at Highwire, there's still people in Bungie that want to do good work and want to put out quality games, but they're also not stupid. They also see the choices that are being made. And, you know, like I said, you can only do that for so long and you can only frustrate your employees so much before, you know, Marty O'Donnell just up and quits on you and then sues you because you're taking his money. Like, this, you know, you can only push people around so much. And that's something that, like, I feel like Activision is very much known for as a company, is like pushing people around and like forcing people to, you know, like, get the game out, do that, finish this up, whatever. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. We gotta sell this hotcake, sell this snake oil, like, and make that money, right? And it's unfortunate, but you know, I don't even know how they would fight back. You know what I mean? Because like $500 million, right? It's a lot of money.
It certainly is.
It's a lot of money. And like even Jason Jones, who I'm sure is very rich. You know, like, what's Jason Jones worth? Like, if Jason Jones is worth $10 million, maybe, in, you know, like, personally or whatever, that doesn't even come close. You break that contract with Activision and you owe them, you know, like, $500 million plus there has to be clauses in there that say, like, if you break it, you owe us more money. So, like, yeah. If they stopped making Destiny and, like, they would stop being a company, Bungie would just disappear. And that would be, I guess, even worse, because then, you know, Jason Jones or who, you know, would be the, you know, the one who got, I don't know how many people work at Bungie now. It's got to be hundreds. Hundreds of people would lose their jobs.
500 and something.
Yeah. 500 human beings would be without food for their families and stuff like that. So like, it sucks. They did the deal with the devil, and the devil, he gets his due every time.
Yeah. Anyways, back to PAX.
That was a long Bungie.
That was a long rant. We could go on, I'm sure.
But a good one. Oh, we could.
So, other than the RUL party, which I guess there was a biting finger lady, we had the last PAX dinner at the Spaghetti Factory. It was kind of impromptu Tuesday night. Everyone who was still left, which was a few HBOers. Jeff was there. Rukari was there. The rest of the RUL who were still in town were there. Haas and myself were there, so that was kind of like the last
few. Haas's family.
Yeah,
my favorite story from that night is definitely the manager. So like there were some, you know, there was a lot of people there, and there were some issues with the service and stuff like that. But I just happened to run into the manager in the hallway, and we just got to talking. I was just like, hey, thanks for serving us. I know that we're like a lot of people, and it's kind of complicated and everything like that. And he was like, yeah, no problem. He's like, so what are you guys, like a company and all of that? And I was like, oh, no, we're just like a bunch of friends that all really like Halo. He's like, did you say Halo? And I was like, yeah, like the video game? He's like, I love Halo.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, my man. And like, so then we ended up just talking about the campaign for like 15 minutes, just like by the kitchen doors.
Wow.
It was so great. It's just like, I love Halo fans in the wild are my favorite thing.
Huh. That's really interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, no, we had a great chat. It was so funny because he was like a straight up campaign guy. We were talking about like Halo 4 campaign versus Halo 3 campaign. And of course, my personal favorite, ODST. Praise the ODST. And everything like that. And, you know, I tried to pimp out Jeff a little bit. I was like, yeah, Jeff Easterling, he's in there. He writes the cannon fodder blogs for 343. You should go talk to him about campaign stuff. He loves it and everything like that. So, yeah, no, it was great. He was a really nice
guy.
That's
cool. I had no idea that happened.
Yeah, like I said, it was just like, you know how we were in that back room, but then like as soon as you went around the corner, the kitchen doors were like right there, Dustin. I was literally just standing like in that hallway. It was like I was on the way to like go to the bathroom or something like that. Yeah, we had a great combo.
Very interesting. So is there anything else that you guys wanted to fill in? I know we've been going long for the podcast, so I kind of want to wrap things up.
I can't think about anything else. Just, I mean, there are indie games that were fun, like Screen Peek or Screen Sheet and Party Hard, but...
Oh, Party Hard was great.
Party Hard is great. And they're updating it. They've updated it twice since
I know,
since
like
PAX.
Sharknadoes and stuff like that. Yeah, I have, because I have the code, and like I got halfway through the game on the plane ride back. Party
so
Hard.
So hard, actually. Hard.
such a fun game. Yeah, then like as they add new stuff in and like the different levels get really difficult. Like being able to hide like up and behind the house and stuff like that is so easy compared to like some of like the rooftop parties and stuff. It gets insanely difficult. That would be the last game that we hadn't talked about. Yeah, Party Hard was really, really fun.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
on
thank
us.
You guys, you know, for coming.
It's nice to come back to Odd Tech.
Yeah, none of the Bio and Haas couldn't make tonight. Bio is still without internet.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah. Okay. He's been battling getting service for 6 to 8 weeks now. He's been without internet.
Yeah, no, he was talking about it on Twitter. I saw I was wondering where he was at.
So that's still going on. And then Haas had some family obligations, so he couldn't make it tonight either. But thank you guys for coming on.
He's in the chat. Huh? So he's in the chat.
He's in the chat. Yeah, he is monitoring the chat.
This is because he's our homeboy. Shout out to Haas.
Indeed. Shout out to Haas for putting me and Bio up at his place for a good majority of the week.
Haas is just the best.
Shout out to Haas's beard for being fantastic.
And the beard game at PAX this year was so strong. It's like, oh man,
it was ridiculous. Impressed.
Scott Bradford was bringing it like nobody else. We need to start a Halo beard club.
Oh gosh.
You know, like that's what, you know, like we can just discuss fine beard techniques, you know, mustache creams, things like that. That's what we need to do next, PAX, is the meeting of the annual Halo Beard Gentlemen's Society.
So I actually took a picture of Haas, Vic, and you guys know Harley from Epic Mealtime?
Yeah. That was a surprise at the party.
Had some beard game.
He's also so tall. My God.
He is big.
Yeah, when someone makes Claude look short, you know they're tall,
right? Not many people can do that, but yeah. So I took a picture of the three of them and tweeted it out. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
The epic beard party, pretty much.
Epic beard time.
Pretty much. So that's our attempt at doing our little PAX recap. I know we ranted on a lot of other stuff in this show, but there really wasn't much stuff in Halo to talk about, to be perfectly honest. I mean, that is what it is. The only new stuff that we saw was people got to play Warzone who hadn't got to play Warzone at PAX. Fathom was shown off at ID at Xbox. And there's been a couple community updates that have been out since then. One of them showed off the rig, which is a new arena map. And they actually go into detail on that one. So there's actually some pretty cool information in there about the development from concept. So one of the senior concept artists, I think his name was Chris, he actually has a little piece in there how he went about starting off the rig as they wanted to be a mobile rig platform where it was actually moving in the map, but you're actually playing on the rig that is the play space, but it was still moving. And then they decided to change it to stationary. So there's a couple of concept designs up there. And then one of the actual level designers, he goes through actually designing different aspects of the level and how it translates to like the final design. And it turns out the rig is one of the maps that was completed early on in the development process and is where a lot of the weapon tuning and ability tuning has been done. So the rig is like a studio favorite.
Yeah, I think it really reminds me of the Lockout remake in Halo 3 Blackout. That's the first, whenever I saw a shot, it's the first time I shot it, I was like, ooh, new Blackout. Because that's what it reminds me of, right? I mean, like Blackout was a UNSC offshore mining or drilling apparatus, and so
I didn't even
rig.
Think
it's
about
like
that.
The same sort of.
Interesting.
A spiritual successor. Like a lot of people, you know, a lot of people gave Blackout, a lot of flack.
Yeah, they
but,
did.
Regardless of how you felt about the window being there or not or whatever, I still enjoyed playing on Blackout in Halo 3. I still thought it was a pretty solid map, and I liked that it was just it was at night and outdoors. How many nighttime outdoor maps are there in Halo? There weren't as many back then. There's more now, but like it's still, that's one of my favorite just like environments for Halo to live in, like urban sort of outdoor nighttime. It's like and the other new map, it's I'm blanking on it. It has all the Asian writing on it, and it kind of reminded me of the Halo 2 urban map. I can't remember what it's called now. It's killing me.
The nighttime one in Halo 5?
Yeah, in Halo 5, they recently just showed off pictures of it. No, not Eden, though. The urban one. The urban one that has all the neon signs that are like, a lot of them have Asian writing and symbols on them. I can't remember what that map
Coliseum,
is called.
Coliseum, because that's the other one.
No, it's not Coliseum.
Shoot, I know which map you're talking about. I forget the name of it, though. Shoot. Yeah, I know which map you're talking about. If someone in the chat knows, post it.
Someone in the chat, figure it out. Figure it out. Look it up. It's on the Google.
Yeah.
God, what's the name of that map? It's killing me. It's killing me now.
Because they announced three of them.
It was in that announcement.
Dang. Yeah, I forget.
Well, maybe we'll never know. They say that the chat is still Googling to this day.
Just like your experience in the PAX line, Jeff?
It was a heck of a ride.
27 whole years?
Well, you know, it felt like it because I was waiting to play Halo. Yeah, that was a fun video to make. I had a blast doing that one.
That was interesting how you made it like 6 months later, 3 years later, 18 years later.
It got real, right? I actually, honestly, the most fun I had in that video is like was making the fake credits at the end. I had so much fun just going through and like making up all the titles. Like, I don't know.
Plaza?
If,
huh? By the way, was it
Plaza?
Plaza, that's yeah, that's map. Right.
You're right. It is Plaza. Good call. There's Josh. Always helping out. That's why he's the CEO, ladies and gentlemen. That's why he gets paid the dollars, the big dollars.
Got it. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up, everybody, for us tonight. So thanks for tuning in. We had a great discussion with Gus, and we've had a good time walking down memory lane for the most part. The highlight for me, obviously, was the community. Wing Dome, Rick Barbecue,
oh, the best.
Star UL Party, and the Highwire meetup was awesome. Hugs. Last PAX dinner was awesome. I am still mad that we didn't get to do any Cards Against Humanity, or I didn't get to do Cards Against Humanity with you guys. That still sucks.
I didn't play it at all.
Yeah, I didn't play Cards Against Humanity. There was two things that I wanted to do: Cards Against Humanity, and you know, I didn't get to get involved in the Jet Motel, which I do every year.
We actually didn't do the Jet Motel because Drax didn't.
Yeah,
put,
we didn't do the
Drax
Jet Motel
didn't
at all.
Select the right hotel.
Yeah. Oh no!
Yeah, we stayed at a Holidays Inn or Days Inn, one of the two.
Well, good, because that way everyone skipped the Jet Motel. But then next year, because yeah, like the thing is, like I told Dan, I was like, "Yo, book it for 6 days. Last day we're going to the Jet Motel," and the idiot booked it for the full week, costing me money.
We went to Ruth Chris.
Oh yeah, that was great. What a great. We had a little like private.
I was getting sick though.
Are you well? You weren't feeling well. But I mean, you still had one of the best steaks you've ever eaten, right, Josh?
It was very good steak.
Cool. So anyways, that'll be next year. And then there was another thing that I got to take part in, which I really can't talk about too much, but it basically involved me going to 343. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I didn't even get to go to that. I got zero invites to cool stuff this year. I was all on the out and out. But honestly, I had a great time anyway because I was just hanging out with different RULers and like doing community stuff. It was really fun. I didn't have to organize too much stuff, and I didn't have to hold too many hands. So it was mostly just like hanging out with friends, because like most people had been to PAX at least once before, so there wasn't too much uncertainty or like where do we go or any of that stuff. So it
right.
was really it was just fun.
Which is good. Yeah, so you can just sit down, relax, and enjoy the time actually being at PAX instead of having to worry about doing the whole touristy stuff and really showing everyone around for the PAX show floor and trying to get to everything. So it's gotten to a point where it's, and I was saying this before when we first started up this segment, it's a lot easier, it's a lot less of a headache to actually go and get stuff done.
Yeah, it's yeah. Well, that was the thing, is that like I never had, like when I had to run off to a media appointment or anything like that, I was never like, oh, who's going to take care of these people? Or like, you know, like, do you guys know where to go? It was just like, oh, I got to go do an interview. I'll talk to you guys later. And then like, and the other thing is being able to use my cell phone, being actually down there really helped as well, because so I could like actually be in communication with people all the time. But like,
let's put quotation marks around being able to use.
You know,
there's always the connection issues. It's too many people.
I got text from him just fine.
Yeah, it was like, well, I mean, like, yeah, when you were in the convention center, the signal was not always consistent, but I mean, it wasn't too bad. Usually, like I said, and this just comes with knowledge, right? Pretty much any location that I can think of in the convention center, I can think of a cell phone worthy area that I would go to. You know what I mean? That I know of that I can like quickly, like if you're in the back hall, go to the Skybridge, right? If you're downstairs, just go to the back area where there's the shirts and everything like that. Like there's lots of different things. If you're all the way up, you can just go out on the balconies. There's like a few different places.
So I never had a problem with phone or text reception, but the data saturation, of course, is horrible in those places.
Yes, it is.
I could get texts and phone calls just fine.
I got most texts fine. It's when I tried to use iMessage that I'd run into issues.
Yeah, because it's data.
Oh, the thing is, like, yeah, I use, yeah, that's the thing is that, like, I have my, like, Dustin, we were texting before, and you sent one to my Canadian number, which, like, you could call me when we were both in PAX, and it wasn't any more expensive because, like, that's my local calling area when I'm there. But now that we're different, if you text me there, it's wrong, but because it costs, it's like an international text, right? But my other, my American number, but I have through Google Voice, but that's all data. Like, there's no cell phone networks involved. And so that was where I had the most trouble, was because if I didn't have a data connection, I pretty much couldn't text with that number.
Gotcha. Well, I think I get texts to Canada for the same price as I do a US text. For me personally.
Yeah, I don't know if I would get charged more or not, but it's like I have the American number, so I'm always just like, any of my American friends, I'm like, yeah, just use that.
Gotcha. So that'll be it for us tonight. Thanks everyone for dropping on by. We did post our PAX pictures, at least the ones that we took, so you can head on over to our Facebook page and check those out. And I want to give a huge thanks again to Gus for coming on and talking to us a little bit about his gaming experience and how he thinks the direction is going for the kind of the gaming industry, and just being able to talk about just himself. Because I know a lot of the interviews that we typically do, and I know for like some high profile people, they're used to talking about what they're doing and what they're working all the time. Where I thought it was just a good one to talk to Gus just about him. So I hope you guys enjoyed that one. I think he had a good time chatting with us. And then thank you to Minolta and Rebel for coming on and talking PAX in lieu of Bio and Haas not being able to attend. So thanks again, guys, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm never one to not enjoy a podcast. Talking is fun.
Very nice. So we did finally publish our application page. So for those that are interested in getting involved with PodTackler and helping us out, you can apply to do so. So if you head on over to podtackler.com/apply, you can send us your portfolio, your application, and kind of tell us what you're interested in helping us out with. And we'll evaluate it and see if we can get you on the team.
You guys need a cat wrangler? I can wrangle like 2 to 3 cats. I'm pretty good at it too.
We might need a cat wrangler at some point.
All right, because like if you got some cats, they're just like not in a specific area. As long as it's 2 to 3, anything more than that, I'm useless.
Okay, could you just do 2 or 3 at a time and do it multiple times?
Listen, that sounds like some kind of black magic, Dustin. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if you know anything about cat wrangling, but it doesn't like work like that. You know what I mean?
Stop trying to sell yourself, Jeff. Stop trying to sell yourself.
I'm an expert cat wrangler, Josh.
Yeah, and that's why we have you in a cat wrangling position at Ready Up Live.
It sounds like there's more than 2 or 3 cats to wrangle at Ready Up Live, though.
And I can't handle it, Dustin. The pressure is too much.
I don't think we have that many cats, so.
Cool. That's why I want a more laid-back cat wrangling position, so I can like focus on my passion, you know, which is dog wrangling.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So you're just in for the dogs.
Cat wrangling because you can do it, but you really want to...
Well, the cat wrangling, it's where the money is.
Minolta's a sellout. Minolta's a sellout.
Okay.
Oh, I'm a huge sellout. Yeah. I was like, I'll never sell out. And then I was like, wait, how much?
Gotcha. All right. So that'll wrap it up for us tonight. Make sure you check us out on our website, podtackler.com. All of our social networks are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all that fancy stuff. Twitch, which we're broadcasting on tonight.
Beam?
On what?
Beam?
No, what?
Beam, the latest craze in social networking. You should get on Beam, Destin. I'm on Beam.
That
it's spelled B-E-M-E.
No, we are not on that because we're not weird. Like that.
Are you saying Jeff's weird?
Ouch!
We're not weird and funky enough to be on Beam, I guess.
Jeff is pretty funky fresh.
You killed my heart and my soul, Dustin, with that.
I wasn't saying weird was
double
bad.
Kill. I know. I'm just making the outro to the podcast as like long and
thanks.
Awkward and weird.
Thanks. I appreciate
that's,
it.
That's my job here. Okay. If you're not going to hire me as a cat wrangler, I'm going to ruin this podcast, Dustin.
I never said I wasn't going to hire you, but since you turned down the offer, I guess, well, can't help you anymore.
I mean, I can't even take, like, the problem is that I'm contracted with RUL for like 40 years. It's awful. I signed some napkins like really early on in my career, and they've got me.
I can make a really bad reference to Destiny contract, but I'm not going to do that.
That's what I was setting you up for. I was teeing you up, man.
Are you trying to imply we're as bad as Activision, Jeff?
You're worse, Josh. You're worse.
Thank you. I am actually worse than Bobby Kotick.
Worse than Bobby Kotick.
All right. On that note, thanks everyone for listening. This has been episode 503, and we will see you guys next week.